call the meeting of the Capital Investment Committee to order. Welcome. Seems to be an item today that has generated some interest. Not sure why. I guess must be something up. Before us, we have Representative Abrams, who is joined by Representative Solberg. The chair will move House File 263, be recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Capital, on Ways and Means. And I believe we have at least one author's amendment. Representative Abrams, I believe you have a delete all amendment. That would be the UE1 amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and the reason for the amendment is if I did a line and page, it would be literally indecipherable. By doing it as a delete everything, you'll have it all in front of you.
Okay, the chair will move the UE1 amendment so we can get the bill in the shape the author is interested in presenting that. Any discussion to that? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Abrams, please present your bill.
Thank you, Chairman Dorman, and thank you, members of the committee. I have with me at the table the lead DFL author on the bill, Representative Lauren Solberg, and this is a partnership and will be as we go through, and the president of the university, Bob Brunings. By way of a quick introduction, House File 263 is the University of Minnesota Football Stadium Bill, and it incorporates the latest announcement by the University of Minnesota. I believe members received an email over my signature, Representative Kelleher's signature, Senator Metzen's signature, and Senator Michelle's signature over the weekend. The long and short of it, members, is that House File 263 will bring football back to the campus of the University of Minnesota. It does so in a partnership, not only public and private, but a partnership between the University of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota. When you get to Section 4 of the bill, which is the guts, the University of Minnesota will have had to have raised $124 million towards the cost of the stadium, and the other $9.4 million will be paid by the state of Minnesota to the University of Minnesota for stadium costs over a 25-year period. In addition, the University of Minnesota will convey some land to the state of Minnesota that could be more adequately described by President Brunings. As I understand it, it is land that was acquired from the federal government in 1947, that it is some of the most pristine park and natural resource land in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. It is approximately 4 square miles, and that 12 square miles, and that this land, the university will retain its research and teaching functions on the land, but that the Department of Natural Resources will have the ability to develop the land in order to have more access. The University of Minnesota is an educational institution. They don't do tours and opening up lands and access to lands as part of their mission. Members, we could go through the bill section by section, but I think to better spend the committee's time, I would ask that President Brunings go through his presentation and describe the proposal in a little greater detail.
Thank you, Representative Abrams. President Brunings, welcome to the committee. We're interested in your thoughts on House File 263, and we're looking forward to what you have to say.
Thank you, Chair Dorman. Members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be with you once again. And thank you for the opportunity to present this, I think, very exciting and innovative idea for bringing Gopher football back to the campus where I believe it ideally belongs. I'll make some relatively brief remarks, and I have some additional people with me. Joel Maturi, our Director of Intercollegiate Athletics, Coach Glenn Mason, our head football coach is here, Brigadier General Denny Schulstead. Chief John Lindell is here, who is our co-chair of the stadium fundraising campaign, and along with his wife, Nancy, a major contributor to the stadium project. And I believe Tom Zierle, one of our student leaders, former MSA president, is here as well. And there are additional people who can answer technical questions the committee may have about this bill. As Representative Abrams indicated, you have a new proposal before you, an amendment to help the University of Minnesota build an on-campus football stadium. I believe the original proposal we submitted to the House and Senate and have discussed over the past 3 years stands very well on its own, and if funded would be a very valuable asset to the university and to the state. I think this new proposal is an even more exciting idea. The University of Minnesota has played collegiate football for more than 123 years, and 100 of those years have been played on the Twin Cities campus. We think that's the right place to play Gopher football, Minnesota's only Division I football program. For the past 3 years, we have discussed the issue of an on-campus stadium with the legislature, and we've discussed what it can mean for the university community, for the citizens of our state, for Big Ten football fans, for our students, and for our region. As responsible stewards, we see our deal at the Metrodome becoming increasingly untenable. Both the Twins and the Vikings have indicated quite strongly that they are seeking new venues before 2011. And I must simply tell you that the university cannot support the Metrodome on its own. If we were the only tenant in the Metrodome, a likely outcome under the current scenario, it would cost us an estimated $7 million a year just to operate the facility, just the operating cost, an amount that approaches our initial request for a new stadium on campus. And the Metrodome, a 35-year-old facility, is in a great need of restoration and ongoing improvement for additional annual costs as far as the eye can see. The proposal we brought before you is to build a 50,000-seat open-air stadium, one that will resurrect some of the great game traditions and inspire pride in students, faculty, staff, alumni, and fans of Gopher football. It would bring together students, alumni, friends of the university to provide a space for larger events, or large events such as potential all-campus graduations, convocation, and other significant events. It would be a home for intramural sports for our students. It will be a dual football and soccer field, a place for our marching band, a great state treasure without a home at the present time, and a home for many other activities as well. I think we have done our homework in building this project. We've looked long and hard at where we should play and what kind of a facility would be ideal to support the team within the available resources that I think we can develop together. This has been a very open process, and it's been a process that I think will lead to a proposal and a plan that is clearly deserving of your support. Today, at the urging of legislative leaders, state policymakers, and community leaders in Dakota County, we are proposing a change to our initial plan and proposal. This modification provides significant added benefits and opportunities for the state of Minnesota. It's an idea that will pay dividends for many years and many generations for Minnesotans to come, allowing us to bring the football program back to campus and set us on a path to set aside nearly 3,000 acres of environmentally sensitive land in perpetuity. Under the old proposal, as Representative Abrams indicated, the university sought $7.4 million per year from the state to help fund 40% of the debt incurred for a new stadium. Under this proposal, the state would instead service 50% of the debt, providing $9.4 million per year over 25 years. In exchange, the university will, after 25 years of joint management with the Department of Natural Resources, transfer ownership of 2,840 acres of prime green space and natural habitat to the state of Minnesota. The property in question is called Umore Park. This is a 12-mile, It's a 12-square-mile park, nearly 8,000 acres total, in Rosemont, about 25 miles south of where we are sitting here today. It was originally deeded to the University of Minnesota, as Representative Abrams indicated, by the U.S. government in 1947, after the site was developed to be an ordnance factory during World War II. It's a very unique area. It's a large expanse of relatively open space in a rapidly urbanizing metropolitan area, perhaps the largest such area in the United States today. This land has been used for research by faculty, staff, and students from across the university, with about 50 very active research projects being conducted there today. The portion of Umore Park that this partnership involves is 2,840 acres, located west of US Highway 52 and largely south of 170th Street. And I believe we have enclosed a map in the handouts for your review. It's the green section of the map, and I think it's either the second or third page of the handout. One of our regents who is with us today, David Metzen, says this parcel of land is probably the most beautiful piece of property in the nation, and I think he may be right. This proposed agreement would protect this property, as I indicated, in perpetuity as a public nature preserve while keeping it open for public recreation and educational uses. The southern stretch of the 2,800-acre property includes environmentally sensitive areas along the Vermilion River watershed, wildlife and well-managed public hiking, horse and cross-country ski trails, and many other possible amenities. It is also adjacent to some very important areas of protected greenway and parks development for the county and the entire region. Over the past 10 years, our Board of Regents has received a number of special studies, assessments, and resource inventories of the property. And as part of our broad strategic positioning process, we have felt that it's important to identify important aspects of the use for the use of Umore Park as a way of strengthening the university's long-term academic and financial strategy. This idea may appear to you to be an overnight sensation, bursting on the scene all at once. But just as usually is the case with singers and musicians, behind this sensation is years of hard work and planning. It's this careful long-term planning, and I would add very extensive consultation with the region and the affected communities, that we have done over the past several years that allows us the confidence to take advantage of this unique and new opportunity. We think this proposed partnership offers a number of very significant benefits for the university and for the state of Minnesota. Let me just enumerate them very, very quickly. It will commit in perpetuity greatly expanded and publicly managed green space in the midst of an increasingly urban area. It will maintain the university's compatible research, natural resource, agricultural, and related research, education, and outreach activities that reflect the history and traditions of this area, while also contributing to the necessary research and discovery that benefits our citizens, benefits the environment, and our economy. It will enhance Dakota County's efforts to create an estimated 1,000-acre regional park system directly adjacent to the proposed land parcel at Umore Park. It will conserve and maintain this environmentally sensitive asset for public use and the public good, an asset that incidentally includes a trout stream, two endangered species, and many other very, very significant features. I understand why there may be some skeptics, and some of them have written recently about this project, who have posed the question, what's the difference between having the U, a public entity, or the state, another public entity, manage or own this land? If the university were to continue to manage this parcel, we certainly would preserve the natural habitat, particularly in the environmentally sensitive area, but probably not an area quite this large. Other parts of this parcel might be developed in ways other than green space in order to further our academic mission. This agreement guarantees, absolutely guarantees, an undeveloped natural area for the public in perpetuity. We at the University of Minnesota do manage natural lands on a small scale at several sites throughout the state of Minnesota, and I believe we do a good job of it. But we are not in the business of creating real public amenities such as trails or interpretive centers or managing large numbers of visitors. The bottom line is that although this land may be well stewarded by the university, the public would never have the same kind of access that they potentially have under state ownership. There is a real benefit to the state of Minnesota in this proposal. The amendment to the bill you have before you, as I indicated, increases the level of annual state support from $7.4 million, which reflects the previous 60-40 university-state funding split, to $9.4 million, an amount sufficient to service $124 million of the $248 million cost of the stadium. This would be university-issued debt for the stadium's construction. And this reflects, as I indicated, roughly a 50-50 partnership. And if you take a look at one of the other parts of your handouts, you can see the financing assumptions and how they have changed from the original to the current proposal. This legislation pertains only to the state's funding half, or only half of the responsibility. The university would still be responsible for finding the other 50% through a variety of means, including private fundraising, state appropriations, and other sources, including a very modest student fee. Outside this bill's purview, we at the university have committed to using the state's increased contribution to cut the proposed student fee for the stadium by 50%. From $50 per semester to $25. That's great news for our students who will have the benefit beyond discounted football tickets and preferred seating. They will also have opportunities for discounted costs related to the arts and other amenities on the University of Minnesota campus. This particular proposal does not differ a great deal from how we fund buildings under our normal capital bonding cycle. You may recall that early in the 1990s, the state share of capital projects for Minscu and the University of Minnesota was 100%. I believe in 1990, the legislature changed that practice and required the university and Minscu to pay one-third of the cost on new and remodeled buildings. We finance our one-third portion in part from our state appropriation, private contributions, student tuition, and many other sources. And we've been very aggressive as a consequence of this legislative change in trying to raise private funding to help support the academic mission of the University of Minnesota. So what we're proposing here today is the same basic strategy we've used in financing other capital projects at the University of Minnesota, and we propose to use for the on-campus stadium part state dollars and part university dollars raised through private contribution, student support, and game, in this case, game day revenues. Let me just conclude with a few more final comments. The amendment provides for permanent protection of 2,800 plus acres of university land at Umore Park in Dakota County and forms a permanent nature preserve. Over the 25 years that the state would make annual payments required to serve the university's stadium debt, the university would continue to own the land and would be able to use it for its normal academic purposes, purposes that I might add are completely compatible with public use. Residential, commercial, and industrial development of the land would be absolutely prohibited, enforceable by the State Department of Natural Resources. With DNR, we'd have joint cooperative planning and management of the site over the next 25 years to work out details and to make it much more accessible to the public. Once the stadium-related bonds have been paid, the land would be offered to the state for a total of $1. Upon sale, the university would retain the perpetual right to use the land for research and educational purposes as it does today, in ways that are compatible with public use. And in my mind, this would not preclude the state from using the land for nearly all its potential outdoor recreational and open space management purposes. I think this is a win-win proposition for everyone, for the state of Minnesota, the citizens of this state, and obviously the university and its students. And it builds on an already sound idea for bringing the stadium back to campus. There is a sizable grassroots movement of fans and friends of the university behind the stadium idea, as you know. And that enthusiasm has only grown with this particular proposal, far more than I anticipated just a week ago. Earlier this week, the university's faculty consultative committee passed a resolution in support of this proposal. And last night, the Minnesota Student Association withdrew its support for other stadium-related ideas in order to vote overwhelmingly for this innovative idea. There were about 40 students in attendance, student leaders, and at least by my report, only one dissenting vote. Just this afternoon, I received a statement from Empire Township, which abuts the property, saying that they very strongly support this proposal. This bill, as amended, would result in some of the most beautiful, undeveloped land in the region being protected for generations to come. It would provide financing we need to bring Gopher football back to campus. It will allow the University of Minnesota to cut the anticipated student cost in half from $50 to $25 per semester. And we believe it will create increased momentum for our private fundraising efforts, a very considerable task that lies ahead of us and still remains a considerable challenge. I just want to finish with a couple of sentences of comments. We've been talking about this for 3 years, and I believe this is the year we need to make it happen. Quite honestly, if we don't make it happen this year, I think it will be a bridge too far and be very difficult to accomplish. Someday, however, the state is going to have to address this issue. We at the university greatly appreciate your attention to this request and your consideration of this historic legislation. I'd like to take a few moments, first of all, to introduce regents who have joined me here today. In back of me are Regents David Metzen, former chair of the university's board of regents, Regent Dallas Bonsack, and Regent Stephen Hunter. And I want to thank them for joining us. I'd like now to invite Joel Maturi, our Director of Intercollegiate Athletics, to say a few comments along with Coach Mason. And then we have Brigadier General Dennis Schulstead, and I believe, Tom, you're scheduled to talk. Tom Zierle, former President of the Minnesota Student Association.
Great. Welcome, Mr. Maturi. Chair Harmon, members of the committee, my name is Joel Maturi, the Director of Athletics here at the University of Minnesota, and it's certainly my pleasure to be able to address you this afternoon. No one is more excited about the possibilities of us bringing football back to campus. Some of you are very much aware that 4 years ago the university made a decision to combine its men's and women's athletics programs, and I've been blessed to be named the first athletic director of both the men and the women. In that transition of 4 years, a lot of things have happened on our campus. We had to develop a new mission statement, establish some new values, and a new vision. And in doing so, part of our strategic initiative was to bring Gopher football back to campus, understanding that this initiative came from all of our coaches, our staff, and our student athletes, because this is more than about football. And interestingly enough, our mission statement begins with the words that, we are a window to the university. And how true that is. The reality of intercollegiate athletics in today's culture is that we probably get far more recognition and publicity than sometimes we deserve, especially in a major research institution at the University of Minnesota. But it's a reality of our culture. When we do things well, everybody's pretty much aware. When we don't do things as well as we'd like, people are aware of that as well. And I told you the story, some of you individually and sometimes in another setting, of Joel Maturi as a 7-year-old in 1952. In fact, I looked it up the other day, October 18th, 1952. My dad got in the car with two of my older brothers and I, and we drove to the Twin Cities campus, the University of Minnesota, my first time ever in the Twin Cities, from Chisholm, Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and my first time certainly on campus, and I saw the Gophers beat Illinois that Saturday afternoon. Statistics tell us that many of you also made your first connection with the University of Minnesota the same way. In fact, we're told that over 50% of the citizens of the state of Minnesota make their first contact with the University of Minnesota through intercollegiate athletics. And athletics is a very, very important part of our great research institution. The statistics tell us that we have 360,000 living alumni, 250,000 of which live within 90 minutes of campus. Nothing more than intercollegiate football on other Big Ten campuses or many other campuses in America is celebrated more than a football game. It's an event. It's a happening. It's a reunion. We don't have that at the University of Minnesota. We still play Big Ten football, but we don't have the event. We don't have the happening. And that will be created by bringing football back to campus. It's about the collegiate way. It's about bringing people together to celebrate the pageantry, the history, the tradition, all the things that so many of us are aware, but we have a generation of people here at our institution and in our state that have forgotten what that's all about. As I mentioned, football is part of the equation, but our stadium will be more than for football. It will benefit our rec sports programs. It will benefit our high schools. It will benefit Division II and III institutions. We'll be able to have convocation, graduation in one setting, which today we cannot do those kinds of things. We'd like to think that we could provide an opportunity for our students to have a concert in one venue. Drum Corps International, the many things that someplace happens at other places, we can do that. We're going to have job fairs within our club room and the suites that would be allowed so that our student athletes and students at the university can benefit from gatherings and things of that nature. As I see many of our other student athletes here, none of them, which, interestingly enough, are football players, they realize, too, the importance of bringing football back to campus. The reality of it is we've done a study that we believe that had we played football on campus last year with the attendance that we had, that we would have generated an additional net $3.5 million to our athletics programs. And believe me, that's $3.5 million that we need. I told the Senate committee yesterday that we are proud to be a broad-based program at the University of Minnesota. We have 25 collegiate sports. You need to understand that though that's common in the Big Ten, it is not common nationally. If you follow the papers in sports closely, you know that, for example, the University of Colorado, a pretty high visible and successful athletic program by most people's account, cut more sports just this past week so that the number of sports that they provide in their intercollegiate athletics program now numbers 16. And you have to understand that the 9 sports that they don't have that we do have don't generate dollars for us on an annual basis because most of those are even non-ticketed events, but they do cost us money. But we believe that it's right. It's the right thing for college athletics. It's about the student athletes. It's about diversity. It's about opportunity. And we at the University of Minnesota provide that kind of opportunity for our students and our student athletes. At the same time, we realize the highly visible program of football and the engine that provides, certainly to the train that is our athletics program. And no one would benefit more in that regard than the person that I'm proud to introduce, and that's our head football coach, Coach Glenn Mason. Coach?
Thank you, Joel. Coach. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and give your testimony.
Excuse me?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Glenn Mason. I'm the head football coach at the University of Minnesota, and I could speak on behalf of the position that I hold and why it's important that we bring Gopher football back to campus. The disadvantages that we have to deal with, which are many, and the advantages that coming back to campus would afford. But I think it's maybe more appropriate that I just speak as a vested citizen, resident of Minnesota, that just happens to be passionate about the collegiate experience. I am passionate about it. I've always been passionate about it. I've been very fortunate since I've been 18 years old and a college freshman at another Big Ten university. That's been my life, experiencing this collegiate experience that I love so much. And what it's about, it's about people. It's about the students. It's about the faculty. It's about the fans, the alumni. It's even about the media that gives so much attention to this collegiate experience. And each fall, because of my job, I get to travel around the Big Ten. I get to travel around the country. In my career, I've really been able to go coast to coast during the fall and witness this experience at other universities. And quite honestly, we're missing something here at the University of Minnesota. It's not always been that way. I had the opportunity as a
player in the Big Ten, and also as an assistant coach at two other universities to come and play the University of Minnesota when Gopher football was on campus. And it is quite different, was quite different than it is now. The pageantry that I witnessed then, I didn't know it was University Avenue then, but on a bus coming down University Avenue, seeing the campus alive and the fraternities and sororities and all the activities that was taking place and watching the band march down University Avenue was nothing less than spectacular. Very similar to the collegiate experience that our partners in the Big Ten enjoy each and every weekend. I'm one of those that believe that there is the primary purpose of any university is academically oriented, but there's also a social part of it. That's what keeps bringing people back to campuses over and over and over again, is those feelings, those acquaintances, those experiences they had on their college campus. I remember my first day in employment at the University of Minnesota, December 16, 1996, at the press conference, about 30 minutes after I'd taken the job, one of the first questions I was asked by the media, which I thought was kind of strange, they asked me, well, what do you think about Minnesota playing in the Dome? I only been the coach 30 minutes. How would I know? I hadn't coached it yet. You know? But I thought it was strange that it came out of the media, and it almost warranted a negative response. But I said, oh, I think it's great. It was tremendous. And I did that. And I was self-serving because I knew that the next day I'd have to go recruiting and I'd have to sell it. And I continued to do that for the next number of years, even though I learned quite quickly that we were missing something. It wasn't the best thing for the football program nor the university, in my opinion. And I decided to change my public opinion on it one day in Wayzata when I was jogging. I jogged on weekends, and I got done, and it was a kind of brisk day, but there was an elderly couple sitting on a park bench. And as I went by, they said, nice day. And I said, yeah, it is. And the gentleman said to me, yeah, we come and sit here every time the weather allows because we miss going to Memorial Stadium. At that point, I thought he recognized me as being the football coach of Minnesota. He had no idea who I was. But there's an old park bench there that someone took out of the stadium and put by the lake. And he proceeded to talk about how he and his wife had gone to the University of Minnesota and how much they missed going back to campus. And the reason they didn't go back because they really didn't have a reason to go back anymore. There wasn't a vehicle to bring them back year after year. It's, as Joel mentioned, it's not about the football program. It's not. It's a football stadium that will serve a lot of things, but it's much bigger than that. It's about the student life, the student experience. It's about the continuing alumni experience connected to the university. It's about the community. It's about the state. There is no better vehicle out there to bring people continually back to your campus year after year after year than college football. And that's why I maintain that this is a need for us. It's not a want. And I appreciate you letting me talk here today. Thank you very much.
Coach, I have a question before you go. I seem to recall, I was kind of an advocate for this other stadium that used to play in Memorial Stadium. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but when they're getting ready to move over to the Dome, there were a lot of claims made about the good things that would happen by playing indoors. I think it might have been a newspaper or two had reports of the future of football, we'd be winning a lot of national championships. Curious, are you making any claims that we'll be winning national championships because of this or not?
Well, let me just put it this way. Every day that someone will say to me, and in fact someone already said here today from your group, Coach, when are you going to get us to the Rose Bowl? When are you going to help me get to the Rose Bowl? And I think that, you know, that's a good point. You know, it's about people. Our greatest, as a football coach, my biggest asset is the in-state talent that we produce here at Minnesota. In fact, a byproduct of me coming here today, I got to talk to some representatives in areas that we're trying to recruit players, and I hope that they'll help encourage those young men to come with us. But there was a highly publicized recruit this year that we didn't get. He went to another high-profile university, and when asked how he made his decision, why he didn't like Minnesota, he talked about the lack of the atmosphere, the lack of the stadium, the lack of being on campus. And at my press conference, I was asked by the media, because I think they thought I would be upset and would want to attack. And I said, I agree with them. That's what we've been saying all along. So I'm not sure I answered your question, but we're trying.
We ask a lot of questions here, and a lot of them don't get answered, and a lot of the answers don't meet the question. So, you know, nothing new. I'll pencil that in the Rose Bowl in 2 years, I think.
When should I pencil in the stadium?
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. It was pencil, I guess, was the key. Who's on deck there next? Or no, I guess it wouldn't be on deck in a football stadium. Welcome. Please state your name for the committee. And
I'm Denny Schulsted. I'm the president-elect of the nearly 60,000-member University of Minnesota Alumni Association. And the Alumni Association was the first group to go on record supporting the on-campus stadium. And we did it not only with a vote and with a resolution, but we did it with a $1 million check. We gave the first $1 million to the planning and to the implementation of the plan to have a stadium on campus. We also recognized the importance of academics, and when we wrote that $1 million check, we also wrote another $1 million to scholarship funds, because this is still an academic university. Got a rich tradition in athletics, rich tradition in football. 1941 national championship ball. My wife is from Pasadena. We've been married for 36 years now. I have promised her every year that this is the year we're going back to Pasadena to the Rose Bowl. She's beginning to doubt me, but we still go to every single game. Back in my youth, I was a member of the Minneapolis City Council. And I was the seventh vote, and we needed seven votes to approve the Metrodome. And I agonized over that vote. It was a very tough one to build that $53 million stadium for the Vikings and the Twins. So I can empathize with what you're going through in debating stadiums. It's a tough vote. It's a tough thing to do. I can look back at that vote with great pride, because that Metrodome has hosted two World Series. It's hosted two NCAA Final Fours. It has hosted a World Series, or a Super Bowl. It's the only stadium in the world that's ever hosted a Super Bowl, an NCAA Final Four, and a World Series. But we've outlived that Metrodome now. The Twins, the Vikings, are going to leave. One way or the other, they're going to leave. And that stadium just does not work for the University of Minnesota by themselves, as President Bruning pointed out. I love Gopher football. I have gone to every home Gopher football game since before I was a student. I was there when they were winning the last national championship back in 1960. I've also had the opportunity to attend many, many of the away games when the Gophers travel to other stadiums around the country. My wife and I go to many of those games. When we go to those games, we always visit their campus, because that's where the stadium is. I've gone to Penn State. I've waited in line for half an hour to have a scoop of Paternal Peach ice cream made by their School of Agriculture. I got to know Penn State. Went to Ohio State, watched their pre-game band concert in their Coliseum. I wouldn't have been there otherwise, but their stadium is on campus. I've been in all of the student unions around the Big Ten, because we went to the games at their school. People don't have that opportunity here. We go to those away games, and I'm sorry, Coach, but we lose an awful lot of those away games. We come home and we say we've just had more fun than we have all year. Had a great time. Then we come home to the University of Minnesota, to our games here. And most times we win those games. And we have very comfortable seats in the Metrodome. It's air-conditioned. It's very nice. We often win. We have a great time. We go home and we say, wasn't that a lot of fun? But the key here is we go home. We don't go to things on campus. We don't do the types of things they do on other campuses. You're not going to a pregame picnic. You're not going to an after-game party. You're not experiencing the college ties. And that's the difference between all of the other Big Ten schools and the University of Minnesota. And that is a huge, huge difference. Going to a football game at the University of Minnesota is very much like going to the Guthrie. It's very much like going to a Viking game. It's a 2 or 3 hour event. You have a good time at that event, but then you go home. And we want people to be involved with our University of Minnesota. And that's why we need to have a stadium on campus. We need to have it to establish a relationship for people to be proud of their college. Whether or not they were students, whether or not they're alumni, the University of Minnesota, the football team, is not going to move. They're our team. They will be our team into the foreseeable future. As long as football is played, as long as other sports are played, they're going to be right here. They belong to us. It's our team. It's not going to be sold. It's not going to be traded. It's not going to be moved. It's going to be staying right here. And that campus needs a football stadium right there. So I appreciate what you're going through, and I want you to know that the Alumni Association at the university very, very strongly supports this stadium proposal. But this is also a team. It's the alumni, it's the public in Minnesota, and it's also the students. It's a partnership to build this new stadium. And I'd like to introduce to you Tom Zerle, who's a student leader from the University of Minnesota, who will talk a little bit about what the students are going through at this point.
Thank you, Colonel. I appreciate that. And I think we solved that Rose Bowl problem. Quit playing away games. Just schedule them all at home.
Good idea.
Not so tough.
In the new stadium, right?
Yeah, in the new stadium, but quit playing away games. Go ahead. Please identify yourself with tape. And
Chair Garmin, welcome. Members of the committee, my name is Tom Zerle. I am currently a student representative to the Board of Regents, and also I am the past undergraduate student body president at the University of Minnesota. 5 years ago, we had an issue on campus. We had no heart. Our student union was being redone, and there was no place for students to congregate. You could really feel it in the atmosphere. You look at our student satisfaction surveys, and there's just this big dip when the union was done. 3 years ago, that union reopened, beautiful than ever. It's packed all the time. Student participation's up. Student satisfaction's up. You can tell the campus has a heart again. But we're missing a soul. The soul is the stadium. We are missing this spunk, this atmosphere, this pride that surrounds campus. I've experienced this, but not at the University of Minnesota. Last year I went to the away game at Michigan State, which regretfully we lost. But walking around before the game, there was all these Michigan fans just, you know, tailgating. It was just really exciting. I was a little scared walking around in my room running gold, but I actually felt more proud to be a Gopher fan there than I have at the previous football games at home. And so that experience needs to come back, and I believe an on-campus stadium will bring that to the student body to fulfill, so that the student body will have a heart and soul again. One of the things that I know students are looking forward to with this new potential stadium is being able to have a large concert. Every spring we have a festival that we call Spring Jam. We have a concert every year, but we struggle to find an outdoor venue that we can hold more than 5,000 people in. The stadium would provide that opportunity where the whole student body could go. Another thing is student organizations. Finding a space to hold large conferences and activities is rather difficult. This provides an opportunity for that. And lastly, with the multiple uses, our rec sports. Having played soccer my whole life, I came to the University of Minnesota. Intramural soccer was more competitive than I'd ever played before. I can't imagine being able to play in the middle of a large arena like that for, say, the championship game in just intramural sports. And now I just would like to briefly talk about the proposed amendment and its effect on students. The proposed amendment with the UMar Park directly benefits students. They're the sole beneficiary of this. In fact, the university has willingly offered to raise more money so that the student fee could be dropped to an even 50% of what the proposed would be. At 25, this new proposal would be $25 per student per semester. But one thing students that we've been pushing for is we're paying for the stadium, but we want some tangible benefits out of that. Such are the things that we've asked, and the administration says that they'll work with us and have pretty much reassured us that we'll get some way, shape, or form of this, is affordable student or affordable season tickets, preferential seating in the stadium, special access to other arts venues and other events on campus and in the stadium, and then not to mention with the new revenue that will be generated within the area of the new stadium, discounts to local vendors within the area, and this will all be provided to students for real tangible benefits for the fee, not to mention the spirit and the pride that I'll bring back. And lastly, I'd like to end with the student governments representing the student body at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities 3 years ago has been a strong supporter of bringing back Gopher football and building a stadium on campus. And most recently, just yesterday, with an almost unanimous vote, the undergraduate student body strongly endorses the current proposal because of the strong the benefits to students, and not to mention bringing back the spirit to campus. And I hope when I'm going to graduate here at the end of this May that I'm going to be back here fall of 09 to go to this first home game in the stadium. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Surley. Representative Abrams, do you have any other testifiers? At some point, Representative Abrams, I'd like to bring DNR Commissioner Miriam down to talk a little bit more about the Muir Park, or Umar Park, but go ahead, Commissioner Abrams. Oh, I'm sorry, you got one more. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent, that'd be great.
Jeff Holtz, a representative to the Minnesota Student Association, as well as the University Senate and the CLA Student Board as well. What's being passed out currently is the resolution that was passed last night at Minnesota Student Association. As President Brutnick testified, it was passed with nearly unanimous consent with only one dissent. And what it entails is a complete support to this one proposal as amended with the land exchange. Previously, we had lobbied for two different versions, simply on the premise we wanted a stadium, period. One included fees, one did not. We supported both because, in the end, it created a stadium. Now, as the new statement has said, this is the bill that we support wholeheartedly. And the thing about this bill is, as has been said numerous times already today, it's not just a football stadium. Sports is a part of the college experience, and it has been for you for longer than any of us have been alive. When the university reorganized and reopened following the Civil War, shortly after, what happened? Football, 1882. What was the next thing that happened? Basketball, 1894. Our basketball program is the oldest in the nation. Our football program is the third oldest in the nation. But why did it happen? There's more to college than opening a book and reading it. I personally take classes 15 hours a week. What do you do for the rest of the time? You go to events. You join organizations. You join student government. You participate in sports. This is part of the college experience. If people didn't want to do this, they would go to schools such as University of Phoenix or other online institutions which are very renowned and very capable of educating students. But that's not what happened to you. We came to you to get an experience, an all-around experience. If I wanted to read a book, I could do that in my own time. But that's not what's happening. There's more to it than reading the book. It's also been said, the school pride, the atmosphere. But concentrate one aspect, graduation. Northrop Auditorium, when it originally was built, was housed so it could house the entire, built to house the entire student body. At that time, 4,300 students. Well, that's not the case anymore. There is no place or facility except for the Metrodome off campus, which isn't even ours, for a student body to get together. Graduation ceremonies are a prime example. For graduation today, students are limited to how many people they can invite to their own graduation. If I'm going to pay nearly $70,000 for my education, I want anyone and everyone to come to celebrate what has occurred. And I'm not alone. That is a right that we should have. Yet, at the current status of the U, it cannot occur. Further, as Tom mentioned, spring jam concerts, it would be able to have intramurals, and even facilities for our marching band, one of our largest student organizations, I might add. Currently, they have no practice facilities. The only time they ever get to perform at the Metrodome is game day. Another aspect involving this development of a student life, when the Gophers moved to the Metrodome, at that time, nearly 70% of students were commuters. They did not live on campus. That was a very visible reason to move to the stadium of the Metrodome. If students can commute to campus, they can commute to the games. That's not the case anymore. As of last year, that same percent, approximately 70%, live within 6 miles of campus and are not considered commuters. They live on campus in either student housing, in the residential halls, in Greek housing, or nearby apartment complexes. As you know, Stadium Village by Huron Boulevard, complexes are being built left and right to house new facilities for students. There's also been an increase in student organizations. We have more student organizations on campus than any other university in the Big Ten. There's been a development of the Office of First Year Programs to help continue to improve the experience on the college campus of the University of Minnesota. This program helps incorporate freshmen with orientation programs, with New Student Weekend, and it's just another aspect of it. The next step is truly a stadium, a place where the student body can get together for a common purpose. But as it has also been said, it's not the student body only. Where else can you put together 50,000 people for a common purpose of students, fans, alumni, and the players themselves? That is a college atmosphere. That is what it's about. Being together, creating a sense of atmosphere and community, something we do not have currently. Just like to close that, yes, it is more than books. It's an atmosphere. But yesterday at the committee meeting, Senator Michelle noted that this has been a 3-year proposal. It's 3 years old, and in that aspect, he is correct. But I disagree. It hasn't been 3 years in the running. It's been 30 years. 30 years ago was when the first study came out, what it would cost to renovate and update Memorial Stadium. The cost originally was estimated by the Board of Regents at $10 million. It was never passed. A few years later, it went up to around $15 million. It never passed. This is 30 years now, today. Do not force students, alumni, or our fans to come back here 30 years from now trying to correct for a mistake that never should have happened. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many students were part of the vote? Was it yesterday? How many students were in the room?
We had a quorum at meeting, and quorum is 30 students that voted. We had in attendance Amy, Emily. A rough estimate would be 45 students. And the way Minnesota Student Association works, there's two different types. There's either an at-large representative, in which you are voted on an annual basis, and we'll be having our elections coming up, or you are a representative for a student group. There's numerous representatives, such as an IFC representative or a Panhell representative. But those are the two types, and it truly is an all-around representative sense to get support from, to get the sense of how the student body feels. You can either elect your person, or you can get involved in the student group and go through that way. But yeah, approximately 45.
Thank you.
Yes.
Abrams, anyone else before questions? Or
we have two other witnesses from the veterans groups, and then I think Representative Solberg would like to wrap up for
Commissioner Arian. Great. Please state your name for the tape, and we welcome your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, and today I'm representing that and the Commander's Task Force, of which I was a member of, too. Also, we are on the, President Brunick asked us to be on the committee for the building of the, just kind of a design of it. We had the VFW, the American Legion, the Vietnam Veterans, student veterans groups that were there, and I believe we had the DAV, and maybe even the Purple Heart was there at that one. And just recently we passed the amendment or a mission statement that we would support this. And Memorial Stadium seemed to be the big problem that a lot of members had a hard time with. But we realized that the only way that this thing was going to be built to memorialize the veterans, it was built for World War I veterans. As a matter of fact, the commander of the VFW, his father, put the money in it. He was a World War I veteran. He said he went to those games. And actually, the last time I went to the University of Minnesota football game was 30 years ago when it was still the Memorial Stadium. The thing that I appreciate is that the University of Minnesota wants to continue this veterans initiative with it, because we want to have it that it can be there 24/7, that we can honor the veterans. My goodness, I don't know how many veterans came from the University of Minnesota that died in the many battles that in the wars that we've had, and we wanted to be able to permanently honor those veterans with some sort of memorial right there. He invited us before it was even been approved here to have us on the ground floor of helping design this particular stadium. We also realized that with that $35 million that Twin City Federal that they were going to put forth, that it may not happen if it was demanded that it be named Memorial Stadium. We don't have a problem with it being named whatever it's going to be named, as long as we have the input and get the Veterans Memorial there. And so that's Dennis Schultzstedt asked me to be involved with this, and we are involved, and we're very happy to be involved with the planning and being here to put forth our efforts to make it a successful program.
Great. Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you. And Mr. Kaiser, do you have any objection to it being named Veterans Memorial Stadium or Memorial Stadium?
Absolutely not.
Because I know there's a letter that... thank you. I know, Mr. Chair, I know there's been a letter passed around by the university. We had a conversation last year, and all I'll say is that it encouraged me to go forward with trying to name this stadium Memorial Stadium. I guess the university has pulled the veterans organizations into this particular sphere so that we can name it after a corporation. And, I'll go by your last letter, okay?
Well, sir, we decided that we felt that it probably wouldn't get built. And it was an alternative that we thought was a viable one, all the organizations, we agonized over it also, but we realized that in the end, we'd like to have that memorial in there, and that was the way to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Sometimes when... I want to be careful how I choose my words.
Why start now?
I'm sorry, didn't he?
you do have a point. I guess it sounds like a fear tactic. You know, if you don't go along with this and write a new letter, we at the university guarantee that this won't be built. And it's not a question to you, it's a comment to the university.
Thank you for the comments. Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I want to thank Representative Abrams for inviting me to set up here and be the second author of the bill. It's kind of interesting, the football that's in front of us 1941, that's kind of a special date for me because that's when I came into this world. I was not at the football game. I was parenting that. But I was a student at the University of Minnesota a couple of years, followed them, had the opportunity to go to football games outside. The University of Minnesota asked me after a short time that maybe I should try to find a different vocation other than going to college, but I learned a lot of things there anyway. I learned how not to study. the student said that there's 15 minutes hours in the classroom. And when I attended Harvard, they allowed me to explain your undergraduate grades, and I did. I took that opportunity. I can remember Saturdays at the football game, which were a great opportunity for this little kid from northern Minnesota. I also remember the opportunity that Coach Mason, that we hung Murray Warmath in effigy one year, and the next year we carried him on our shoulders. So the next generation may hang you in effigy, keep in mind that, as the chairman said, when you win that championship, everything is forgotten, and we'll honor you. But I do think it's an opportunity for us to bring it back. I would like to be able to rewrite history. I don't think we should have torn down the other one. And I would like to go up to the library and find some of the people who are critical of the Metrodome, saying that it was an absolute necessity to get the university in there at the time. And I didn't think that was the right thing to do. But I don't have an opportunity to rewrite history. This is what we're dealt with. These are the cards we're dealt with, and we have to try the best to make that the play after that. I'm not about, I don't think, to fold my cards. I have been on board of this for the last few years when we've been discussing it. I've tried to encourage Representative Stang and others to bring it forth when he was the chief author of it. Talk to the speaker to try to bring it forth. It didn't happen. I think we have an opportunity to do that. Of any of the stadiums, I think this is one that we need to be the first one out of the chute. Whether or not the open-air stadium will ever produce another Rose Bowl championship, I don't know. But I do think that we have a problem in front of us, and I want to be part of that solution. I'm happy to join Representative Abrams in this.
Thank you, Representative Solberg.
For the authors.
Is there anyone else in your question there, Representative Abrams?
I think we've about emptied the bench, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I have questions of the authors.
We have questions.
I have questions of the authors.
Yep. Well, that's where we're about to head.
Okay.
Hold up just a minute.
Oh, okay.
Patience. Virtue.
I didn't know if they were going to conclude.
Would you sneak up for a second round here, Mr. President?
I'm a glutton for punishment.
All right. You have additional comments before we move to questions? Or?
No, I do want to... Yes, I guess I want to say something to Representative.
Choose your words carefully. Act like I do, and I never do.
The chair is going to come down hard on me if I don't. I want to just tell you that I called this meeting when I first learned that people had a concern about how we were going to recognize the enormous contributions our veterans have given to this state, our country, and the cause of freedom. They were always on our mind from the very first day that we planned this stadium. So I invited them to breakfast, and I just explained the project. There was no intimidation in this effort, and I asked them to please join with us to think through how we might together develop a plan to recognize our veterans in an appropriate way in the new stadium. So I just want to tell you this was not done to intimidate or do anything of that sort. I think that would be unseemly, to be honest, but But I think that's just a part of the way this project has developed. It's been developed through just literally dozens, and I would argue hundreds of such conversations. And I think we've benefited greatly from each of those conversations. I just want to assure you, because I know this means a great deal to you, and I want to not only assure you that it was done with the very best of intentions, but I think it was done to honor the very concern that you raised, and I appreciate your raising.
Representative Mahoney.
Just one question. President Brunick, I actually had to go down and search around in the halls of the Veterans building down there on the Capitol Mall. Did you have the veterans over to that small house that you occupy over on Mississippi Boulevard, is it?
President Brunick.
Chair Darman.
Conversation.
Representative Mahoney, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I think he was alone. He didn't have Luca Brasi with him. So,
Godfather reference.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the authors, but maybe one question first, and I don't know if the President can answer this. Others, the TCF contribution, is it actually 35 actual dollars, or is it
million?
20? I mean, million. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I could give my name to the stadium.
The Solberg Memorial Stadium.
Well, not the memorial part. That's it.
Is the actual dollar amount 20 million, or and the value is 35, or is the actual dollars that will come from TCF $35 million?
Yeah. The gift commitment is $35 million. It's payable over 25 years with a significant amount front-loaded. But the discounted, you know, the way bankers do in present value terms, it would be equivalent to roughly $20 million or slightly more than $20 million in terms of its total value over that period.
And then my question then, Mr. Chair, is to the authors. Because both of you might remember our doing this when we've had a couple of other sports facilities recently. I think when we did both the Target Center and Excel, we wrote into those bills that because taxpayer money was being used, we wrote in that a portion of nights, that both facilities would give a portion of nights to the high school league for amateur sports. Does anyone recall that? And I mentioned that possibility to the representative of the university who discussed this idea with me to see whether we might do something like that in this package, given the taxpayer dollars. So who can help me with that?
Representative Abrams, Representative Solberg, or
Chairman Dorman, Representative Hausman, I know for the Target Center there was some amateur sports commission evenings that or event days that were given. I am uncertain about the Excel Center, however, Representative
Hausman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I think in the Excel Center the commitment is for the high school league for hockey team, I think, for the hockey tournament only. I think the rest of that is controlled by a private enterprise, the management of it and everything else included. And if there's a concert there, I think the Wild is the one who manages that and so forth. So it is a private entity. And I think our loan to the city, and I think it was classified as a loan at that time, was is $65 million. I don't remember the exact terms. The Target Center was, there were some days given to the Amateur Sports Commission. I don't know how, quite frankly, how successful that has been or if they have cashed in on those particular days. But I know the Amateur Sports Commission was used for that as well.
And Mr. Chair, and the authors, would you be willing or interested in taking a look at something like that to see that whether there might be something written in like that?
Governor Brunix.
Chair Dorman, Representative Hausman, we would encourage that kind of consideration. I think one of the hopes we have is that that amateur sports will see this as their resource as well. We'll have to craft the language in such a way to be compatible with the environmental impact statement that's already completed, and it would have to be language that would encourage the University of Minnesota's Board of Regents to to provide that kind of opportunity, but it's certainly something that we would want to do and want to encourage.
Right. I mean, for the next stop at Ways and Means, we can get, was that crafty language you said?
We can craft the language.
Oh, craft the language.
Yeah, we'd be happy.
I said we need a crafty language.
Mr. Chair, I think...
Representative Kelleher.
I think this is an important issue, and I know that my kids have both enjoyed playing hockey at Ritter and Mariucci as part of their hockey association, and I think that Representative Hausman raises a good point, and I know you're not on Ways and Means, but I will work with you to make sure that this gets attached in Ways and Means and that we have something that can work.
Mm-hmm. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Representative Hausman raises a good question as well. However, you know, we don't do that for other facilities that we participate in with the University of Minnesota. And I think the University of Minnesota does a really good job bringing in kids, whether it's for a science fair, whether it's my kids have played at Ritter and Mariucci as well. I think they already do a good job. And so I would just ask us to be careful in terms of putting additional demands that might muddy the water on the bill. And I think the university already does a great job in that regard.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, be very careful about what's done in this respect, because the targets, I followed the Target Center deal, actually believed it when it was being crafted that the state was going to get something from the Target Center, and the state has gone. It's been totally useless. There's been the supposedly free use required such a copayment for all of the everything associated around with it that it became more expensive than using any other facility in the area, I think including Williams Arena and including anything else. So the state was totally snookered in the deal that it allegedly made with Target Center.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would be very happy to work with Representative Hausman and Representative Kelleher and other members who are interested in this, but I would point out that the management of the football stadium would ultimately be upon the shoulders of the regents of the University of Minnesota. I would say that that's a different group than either the Timberwolves management or the Wild management, in that they're not going through this exercise in order for a facility to only be used 9 or 10 days a year. That at least is how it's been presented to me, not only by the administration but by members of the board, that they want this to be a public space that the public gets to enjoy.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say very similar to Representative Representative Broad. You know, through the years, I've been to many events at I go back to Memorial Stadium, actually, and I can remember seeing high school football band or high school bands there. I think we just got done with the high school basketball tournament. I think that was at Williams Arena. I have absolutely no qualms about the fact this will be used by everybody, and I agree with Representative Broad, being very careful about putting more demands and putting things in statute that might actually limit what we do.
Representative Mahoney, at this point, or this?
No.
Representative Abrams, I have some questions on page 4 of the bill, starting on lines 21. end of line 21, going through 26. Can you tell me what impact that has?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do have the general counsel for the university present. My reading of that is that it's rather inartful, or not totally artful. I don't think that the university drafted it. I think the revisor's office may have drafted it. Nobody in this room drafted it. way in which the university would be held harmless for contamination that predates the university actually getting titled to the land. I think that this language may need a little bit of work, because at least my cursory knowledge of environmental law is that if you are in the chain of custody, even if you don't have primary responsibility, you would have secondary responsibility. And I think that maybe Mr. Rotenberg can enlighten us, but I would think that there is more artful language to make that point apparent than simply what the language appears before you, Mr. Chairman, which is basically the quit claim away the university's secondary responsibility. But maybe Mr. Rotenberg can help.
Well, thank you.
This will help future litigants in Hennepin County, won't it, Mr. Chairman?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Rosenberg. I'm general counsel of the University of Minnesota. As Representative Abrams said, the intent here is to draw attention to the fact that the primary pollution, such as it may exist on the land south, roughly south of 170th Street, was subject to activity by the Department of the Army prior to 1947, and we have been working with them for a long time to assure the cleanup of the land. And our understanding is that the Department of Defense, Army Corps of Engineers, has acknowledged its responsibility to clean up that land. The U of M, of course, in this language, assumes whatever responsibility we've had since we've had the land. Department of the Army, and now the Department of Defense, is assumed responsibility for the cleanup, and that would take place irrespective of this legislation, because we have an interest in making sure that that land is clean. Obviously, as Representative Abrams said, we're prepared to work with DNR to make sure that the land during the 25-year period that we would continue to own the land, subject to the restrictions here in this legislation, is clean and is conveyed in a clean state to the people in Minnesota.
Representative Abrams.
What I would probably recommend to the committee is to take out the language at the end of that sentence that starts with the quit claim through 4.26, and that between now and Ways and Means, that the university would meet with the Attorney General's office in order to more carefully craft the language, because the way I read the language is that the university would basically be absolving itself of a secondary status of responsibility for cleanup of the land, and even though you got a real good responsible party on the hook, asking the state to basically absolve maybe a little bit more, or hold harmless, I guess would be the correct term, would probably be, it's probably very aggressive, Mr. Rotenberg.
Mr. Rotenberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abrams, obviously it's our desire to work with the DNR. As Representative said, we actually have a meeting scheduled. We did that yesterday to deal with exactly this issue. So we're on top of that.
Okay. Representative Abrams, your wishes to delete that?
Yeah, I think it's better to be deleted than to be in, so that when it's added back in, it gets the attention that it deserves.
Sure. The chair will move that the bill on line, bill's amended on line, page 4, line 21, beginning with the word the, through all of line 26 on page 4, be deleted. All those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Are there other amendments? Representative Mahoney.
Well, I have a series of amendments, but I have, a couple of questions that go along with them. I don't know who needs to answer this one, but why 2,700 acres? Why not 7,700 acres? The state of Minnesota is exchanging at a rate of about $82,000 per acre. The estimated cost of an acre of land down there is between $9,000 and $90,000. The University of Minnesota is charging the Dakota Technical College $32,000 an acre for the 107 acres that they need, that they've accidentally built on, and the Senate has $3 million to pay for that in their bill. So why not more than 2,700, 2,800 acres?
President Brunitz, Commissioner Carr, or can you answer that? Why? How do we draw the line there north of the parallel? Or?
Chair, Thurman, Representative Mahoney. First of all, the land value is related to the Rosemont property quite broadly, but this is not considered sort of an acre-for-acre transfer in relationship to the payment. What we're doing is modifying the original proposal in which we've asked the state to pay, you know, roughly $7.4 million a year. We think it was a reasonable thing to ask, since there were serious issues raised by at least some members of the legislature about the impact on student fees. We thought this was a reasonable transactional value to add to the bill. But I think this is more in the vein of creating a real public good. It's not in the vein of creating a dollar for dollar, acre for acre transfer against the state's commitment. I think if we begin to view it that way, I think we'll never get this thing done, to be honest with you.
Right. Representative McNamara has a comment to this point, and then we'll come back to Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney, thank you for bringing the question forward. I think it's a terrific question, and one that when this whole thing started about 10 days ago, or I guess it's probably almost 2 weeks ago now, President Brumick, that we actually started with this. There was talk about the university has brought forward a proposal to build a stadium for in the neighborhood of $99 million, and what the state of Minnesota would get for those $99 million would be to bring football back on campus. And my 83-year-old mother-in-law that quit going to games when you went off campus will be very happy for that, President Brumick. And Coach, she's one of those that misses that. But that said, what we did is we said, how can we make this deal better? What can we do that makes a good deal even better? And, you know, growing up where I did in Dakota County and seeing this land, I always said, you know, we're on the shores of the Vermilion River. The Vermilion River, folks, is the only trophy-designated trout stream in a major metropolitan area in the United States. It is the only trophy-designated trout stream in a major metropolitan area in the United States. We have an opportunity to preserve 3,000 acres on the tributaries of that little river in just a fantastic way, get it under DNR management to do a terrific job. And we said, well, what would be fair, Representative Mahoney? And we looked at it and we said, wow, 3,000 acres. Some could say it has a value of $50 million. Some could say it has a value of $100 million. I would tell you it's priceless. This is an opportunity for these kids to go on a three-hour field trip and spend 2 hours in the real outdoors to enjoy an experience that they will never, ever have anywhere else. The kids from downtown St. Paul, downtown Minneapolis, will be 30 to 35 minutes away from a field trip that will be unbelievable. I mean, this is just an opportunity. This isn't only about this 2,840 acres. We have the Butler Property of the West, 860 acres, that will be a potential regional park, wildlife management area to adjoin the existing 480 acres that we already have, wildlife management area, which adjoins the existing 450 acres of metro wastewater treatment land that's already there, which adjoins potentially Dakota County's scenic and conservation easement area that will probably be in the thousands of acres. Dakota County had the foresight to pass a referendum in 2002 that sets aside $20 million for conservation easements to protect these kind of lands. This is an opportunity that's unbelievable. All of a sudden, we're going to get this priceless jewel of 3,000 acres added to the deal. And President Brumick, I'm just glad when we first discussed that you were open to the idea that came from Joe Dugan and myself when we brought it forward to you, and I just think this is great. And for us to have an opportunity and your openness about this, I really appreciate it as we move forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, it's nice that you explained it that way, because even if we don't put the 3,000 acres into this, it sounds like 35 minutes away from downtown St. Paul, those school kids that can get on a bus can still find a pristine kind of area down there, thanks to Dakota County. But having this bill is kind of getting talked to death, and there's about 10 amendments. Mr. Chair, is your intention to get this bill out of here today, or are we going to come back? Because I've got 2 pages of questions on this particular right. bill. I'm sure at the length that the academia keeps giving longer and longer answers to go along with other people,
But they're shorter than our questions, typically.
No, actually not. My questions have been fairly short and direct.
Right. No, my intentions are we will take a vote on this bill today.
Okay.
I think at 4:30, there's possibly a conflict with this room. If we can't resolve that, we'll be going to somewhere and continuing. And so, no, we're gonna.
With that, then I'd like to introduce the A7 amendment.
Absolutely.
Which is the transfer of the 105-acre parcel of land adjacent to Dakota Technical College that is currently used for their precision driving course for the police, fire, and a variety of others.
Before we go there, because I want to touch back on that land question for a second. President Bernice, Representative Abrams, where did this land come from? Did the state give it to you? Did the state give you money to buy it? Help me understand that.
Chair Darman, the land was deeded by the federal government to the University of Minnesota in 1947.
Okay.
And on this property was located at least the beginnings of a munitions ordnance factory. It really never went completely online, although they did some production, and I think they stored some materials.
So it was not state land?
No, it was not state land.
And then, President Brunix, do you have the ability to say this, you know, we don't do this deal, stadium gets done in another manner. Do you have the ability to sell this land, or would it not be available for sale?
Chair Darman, members of the committee, we do have the ability to sell this land. There was a 30-year public use restriction when the land was deeded to the University of Minnesota. That, of course, has lapsed by now. We do have a major study underway. We fully intend to retain some research interest down there. We have more than 50 projects, but we do believe that we need to, Representative McNamara said, we do need to work with people in the region and with our state to make sure that we maximize the use and the value of this land going forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. The A7 amendment. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a clarification on what the yellow land is. And if Representative McNamara could tell me on this map where the other land is.
On the colored map there, we've got yellow land, we've got green land, and we've got white land. What's
and we're talking about the green land, are we not?
Yeah, the green land.
So what happens to the yellow land?
That Representative Murphy, the yellow portion is the remainder of the land held by the University of Minnesota in Umore Park, and it is part of an intensive planning study right now at the present time.
And Mr. Chair, did you consider putting the yellow land in this proposal too, and then not charging the students anything?
President Brunix.
Chair Darman, Representative Murphy, we did not feel we could, I'll be honest with you, I don't think we can increase the amount of money the state is going to provide and actually get an agreement between the House and Senate. That's my considered judgment. People may disagree with it. It's completely up to the committee if you want to appropriate additional money. But the other point I would make is that the planning studies are not sufficiently developed and refined in the yellow portion of that land, I think, to put them in any kind of a nature preserve. I don't think they're that kind of land. They're more agricultural in nature. The land to the south in the green portion is mostly rolling hills, has the Vermilion River watershed in it. It has clearly two endangered species that have been identified by DNR in 2003. So we did not consider that to be an appropriate, at least transfer at this time. And I frankly would not have taken that proposal to the university's Board of Regents. I think it's premature, and I think we need to continue the study that we have underway to assess the long-term use of the property.
Further questions? Well, if Representative McNamara could tell me where the Butler land is. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy and members, if you have your sheet that Representative Murphy's referring to, I happen to have mine marked up a little bit to show the Butler property. Section 15 is owned by the Butler family and trust. And if you look up in Section 10, the area that has the number 1 of the 10 is also a parcel that the Butler owns, that small kind of lineal up and down that would be just on the west edge of the university land. They also own the 40 acres that is the very upper left of Section 23, the small parcel there. Section 22, Representative Murphy, is the existing WMA land. Section 21 is the existing wastewater treatment land. And basically the Vermilion River runs right along the bottom of the page we have. It runs up above in the Section 23. The Vermilion is above the numbers 23.
Would you hold yours up again, please?
Representative Murphy, it's the Section 15 and then along the Section 10 there.
And that little bit up under number 3, that's part of it too?
In Section 23, Representative Murphy, it would be the very upper left. In Section 3, that's a different quarter, 160 acres that's privately held.
Thank you.
Further questions, if not, Representative Mahoney, to your amendment, to A7 amendment?
Well, the A7 amendment requires the 105-acre parcel of land that the state's been paying a lease to the university through an appropriation to Minsku for a good number of years, and they finally realized that it was becoming overly expensive, and as the explanation was that the university was getting ready to do something with this land, very likely could be sold off for residential, because as President Bennett said, the yellow part of that map is, he called it agricultural land, and as we all that live in the city in the metro area, you know that the other word for agricultural land close into the city is residential land. So Dakota County Tech College decided that it was an important issue for them to purchase that land so they would not have to tear up that driving range, the driving course, not driving range. I want to go play golf. Approximately $3 million plus some change, I don't have the exact figure in front of me, is what is in the Senate bill and probably would have to be given serious consideration by this committee. This amendment just includes the 105-acre parcel into this 2,840-acre parcel and saves the state $3 million, seeing how we're going to top for half of a stadium.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would resist the amendment. I believe that it is, you know, somewhat a related issue, but we're not talking about the park and recreational opportunities that are really the issue that's before the committee. I believe it's a separate issue. The Senate has dealt with it separately. I understand it's in the governor's bill, Representative Mahoney, and I would hope that this doesn't become the omnibus university lands bill and that this amendment would be resisted.
Other comments before we vote? And then members, what we'll do is we will vote on this amendment, and then we'll recess until 4:30, at which point we will reconvene at 4:30 in room 300 North. Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I think that we're working out a room situation where people can stay in this room, but you need to give me a minute here to go check, okay?
So. Okay. Representative Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abrams, you mentioned that this was being dealt with in the governor's budget, or the governor had a proposal on this. Could you tell us what that is or what you know about that proposal?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I believe in the governor's bonding request, there's, I believe, $3.5 million of bond proceeds to go to Minsku in order to buy this parcel. I understand that there was a survey error. Is the genesis of this by the Dakota Technical College. I may be totally incorrect, Representative Mahoney, but that's at least what was told to me.
He is essentially correct. The governor and the Senate both have it in their bill at $3.5 million. We, as I said before, we are paying and have paid for this land in terms of a lease agreement with the university. It is right, it abuts to some pretty prime, potentially residential property, and Minsky has decided that it is time to purchase it. And I'm thinking that
just a driving question.
Should it deserves to be kind of included in this particular bill, and we can use that $3.5 million for wildlife management areas in other parts of the state, seeing how this 3,000-acre piece of wildlife management is going to be used, is going to suck up an awful lot of that money that we put in every year.
All right, seeing no additional comments, all those in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. No. The amendment is not adopted. We're going to pause for a moment. No. Yeah, let's do one more amendment. We'll try to work out this room situation. I think the DFL has it, as I understand, for a caucus at 4:30. And if they want us to continue here, that's fine. Otherwise, we're headed up and north. So, Representative Mahoney, you want to take a swing at one more?
Give them an opportunity to try to find another room. We've got 15 minutes yet before we need to do so.
Representative Mahoney, I did see you, you know, whatever order you want to go in. So, which one do you want next?
Why don't we do the A-10 amendment?
A-10?
A-10.
Wonderful. The A-10 Mahoney amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Well, I'll wait till people dig it out so I don't have to explain it a second time.
Here it is, Lars.
The A-10 amendment, if you go through down to page line 1.20, is already in the bill. In addition to the bill is from line 1.21 to 1.26, and this prohibits an increase of fees or charges imposed on the student attending the University of Minnesota, or money paid by any public entity as a consideration for the right to determine the name of the stadium. And here's my complaint with charging $50 a year. I know it's $25 a semester, but I think there's at least a couple semesters that you can only try to get to. I've not seen any ticket tax, franchise fees on tickets in a proposal. But yet I've seen the cost of an education at the University of Minnesota increased by 72% over the last 5 years. Stop and think about that. 72% tuition increases over the last 5 years, and now we're going to add $50 so that a lot of alumni can come back and have an experience. I followed that band into Memorial Stadium. I understand the idea of putting a stadium on campus and the importance of it. I think it's not as important as reading a book at the university, but I still think it is important to have a football stadium there. But it's hard for me to ask a student to come up with $50 more when we're not asking the alumni, who are most of the ones at the football game, to pay anything special on their tickets. I haven't seen anything like that. The U is also, well, I won't go that particular road, but then we get to the money paid by a non-public entity as consideration in the naming rights. We don't put a corporate name on our university. Someone that was testifying talked about this is the window to the University of Minnesota. And we're going to put a corporate name on it. And on top of that, in the contract, this can't be referred to as the Gopher Football Stadium. It has to be referred to as this corporate name stadium. We don't put a corporate name on a science building or a business building. We may put an individual's name who has donated money. And even if we did put a corporate name on a science or a business building, it is not the window to the University of Minnesota. Do we really want to be the first Big Ten college to put corporate branding on our university, on the window that our state shows off? And if we ever do have that home Rose Bowl game, it will never be called the Gopher Stadium. It will be called something else. So, members, I would ask for your support on this particular amendment. We can do better than putting corporate names over everything. Going down that particular road is something we need to really think about before we do.
Representative Abrams. Well, Mr. Chairman and members, the university has engaged in numerous corporate and private naming sponsorships for a number of buildings. And nationally, there are a lot of arenas in which major universities play and stadiums in which major universities play in which naming rights have been sold. Let me just give you some of the buildings at the University of Minnesota. The Cargill Building of Microbial and Plant Genomics. Carlson School of Management. The Honeywell Auditorium at the Carlson School of Management. The 3M Auditorium at the Carlson School of Management. Ritter Arena, Knight Ritter. My personal favorite is the Toyota Plaza at Mondale Hall. Toyota Plaza. So we'll let a Japanese car manufacturer name a plaza, but we can't do it for a local headquartered company. I think that one of the things that we have done as a legislature, members, is we have encouraged Minsku and we have encouraged the University of Minnesota to engage in public-private partnerships. And they have been successful. And if we are going to be successful as a state in asking our higher education facilities to engage in these partnerships, there are going to be names, there are going to be scholarships named after people and scholarships and buildings named after corporations. Nationally, the University of Syracuse, one of the top teams in the Big East, one of the top football teams in the Big East, one of the top basketball teams in the nation, they play in the Carrier Dome. University of Louisville, which was a pretender this year for BCS consideration, plays in Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. Texas Tech plays at SBC Stadium. Ohio State University has one of their basketball teams playing in the Value City Arena. San Diego State at the Cox Arena. Arizona State University at Wells Fargo Arena. This is not new ground. It is not new ground for universities to have their major intercollegiate athletic teams playing in named facilities. It is not new ground for the University of Minnesota to have corporate sponsorships. And there is one state university that currently plays some of their contests in something called the Midwest Wireless Center. So, again, I would urge at least that part go down. Now, let's talk about the student fees. I have consistently voted against the state legislature becoming the omnibus student fee committee of the Board of Regents or Minsky. It is not new that students are being asked to contribute to athletic facilities that they are, in fact, going to be using. I commented to Donna Peterson, who was at the university. Our terms overlap, she, of course, being much younger than I. And we both contributed to the Bierman Center, which basically at the time was used primarily for the administration of intercollegiate athletics. Some of the other facilities were added on later. In the capital investment bill last year, there was a facility for the University of Minnesota Duluth. And guess what? Students are going to have to pay to use it, and guess what? The intercollegiate athletic department uses that facility. The Bulldogs use that facility on a daily basis. We've had people from who represent student government. However imperfect student government is and however imperfect the voting system is, they are the elected representatives of the Minnesota Student Association on the Twin Cities campus. And we were told that on about a 40-1 vote last night, they have no problem with the current structure that the University of Minnesota Board of Regents has to fund the facility. So I understand how difficult it is, because this is the intersection of two issues that maybe have not been intersected before, the corporate naming rights and the student fees. But I think that when you really drill down, and think about it, there really isn't very much new ground that's being plowed here, either locally or nationally. So I would recommend a no vote on Representative Mahoney's amendment. And I forgot to say something earlier. On the veterans issue, Representative Mahoney, you have been kind enough to talk to me about it on a number of occasions privately. This is, Representative Mahoney's interest in this was not new members, and I appreciate the courtesy that he's shown at least this bill author and how he has dealt with that issue. And I should have spoken up earlier, Representative Mahoney, but I do want to thank you for that at this time.
And while we're thanking folks, thank Margaret and the DFL leadership for agreeing to let us continue in this room, so we will not be moving. We're hanging out, if I understood the hand signals correctly.
Mr. Chair, if people ever do get to caucus today from our caucus, we're in room 10.
So. All right. And I think we have a caucus somewhere, so... But... It's somewhere.
Does that mean that...
I'm not going to comment any further. I'm already...
The caucuses will be less bankers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Mr. Chair... I'm wondering if there's anyone from the U athletic department that could tell us how many season ticket holders there are for the Gophers football teacher.
Anyone in the university had a breakout of season ticket holders, non-student, I assume is what you're asking?
That would be delightful.
Mr. Maturi.
Not enough.
We did a study that said there may be more if they were on campus.
Representative Dorman, members of the committee, we have approximately 18,000 adults, full-paying season ticket holders for the sport of football, about 10,000 student season ticket holders at this time.
Mrs. Mahoney.
And Mr. McCray, do you have a breakdown on the income of those season ticket holders that are non-students? You wouldn't happen to have that, would you, at all?
Mr. McTory, a breakdown of the what?
Of the income.
Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they track that or how they would.
Owners, or are they, you know, most students earn about $5,000 a year, maybe 10. I'm just wondering if those adult alumni are, you know, a week ago I was sitting next to one of your alumni at the WCHA hockey tournament, and this person bought two tickets out of the five sessions, bought two tickets for the five sessions, and showed up for two of them and decided that it wasn't worth to go to the other three. So apparently some of your alumni have a lot more money than the students. Just a question.
I would hope so, but I think that's why they're students. But Mr. McCurry,
Representative Mahoney, members of the committee, we have not done a study as to the income of our season ticket holders. We obviously know that some have been financially more successful than others, many of whom have stepped up and pledged $1 million towards our football stadium. We do have what is called the Legends Group, and we have as many as 15 of those individuals at this time who have pledged $1 million towards the stadium on campus.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and then one final question for Representative Abrams. In your 4-year career at the U, Do you have any recollection of what the increase in tuition costs were from your freshman to your senior year?
What were your increase?
Would it match up to 72% increase?
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did go to the U at a time of high inflation, because I went to the U between 1970 and 1974, and I would suspect, and we were on the quarter system then, and I would suspect that that information could be available, but I don't recall what the increase was.
Mr. Chair? Well, I knew we were about the same age, Representative Abrams. You and I went to the university the exact same 4 years. If I remember right, our tuition started out, you're right, it was quarters. It was $112 or $116 at the beginning.
Plus about a $40 student
fee. Yeah, the student fee, Representative Abrams, were huge in proportion to the tuition. And I'm trying to remember if we were in the 186 when we were done or if it got up to 212 when we were done.
Mr. Chair,
I don't know if there's any 4 years that anybody attended the university when Representative Abrams and I did where we were subjected to larger increases from the beginning to the end. I would love to hear somebody that had a larger increase.
Representative McNair, your tuition...
Wait a minute. Now, you had the answer to the question you asked? That never happens here.
For 71 was... $522. For 72, it was $525. For 73, it was $641. That's a pretty good jump. That's $100. And 74, it was $683. So, and let's see, 2001 was $4,877. 02 was $5,536. And I'll just skip right to 05, is $8,029. Members, let's just pile on to our students and continue to do it. Mr. Chair, I'm done. I could call for a roll call, but I won't. I hope we look at this and force the university and ourselves to come up with this money. I truly do want a football stadium on the campus. We just don't want it worn on the backs of these students.
President Dorn, did you have a comment here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a quick comment and then a question. The Midwest Wireless Center that was referenced, and I appreciate all of Representative Abrams' help with the issue we've had, is really a product of the city of Mankato that was funded through a local option sales tax, and the Minnesota State University at Mankato pays a lease amount, so I see that as different. But I do have a question, and that is, given the buildings with the corporate names on them, can you tell me how is there any threshold in terms of what percentage of the cost of the building folks meet in order to get that name on the building? Just how are we doing in terms of this proposal in terms of what we're selling or what we might sell the naming rights for?
Representative Abrams. Mr. Chairman, I have the total amount and I have the estimated annual payments. The highest estimated annual payments are for the Save Mark Center for Fresno State University at $2 million a year. I would suspect that when you divide the $37.5 million by 25, you get about $1.4 million a year. The only other one above $1.4 million is the Comcast Center that the University of Maryland plays some basketball at. And I would point out that Resident Communications Representative Dorn, Bresnan Center. That's another one we could use, Representative Dorn.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did not know the answer to my question when I asked it, and didn't necessarily expect a full answer right now, but I would be curious if people can shed some light on that in terms of what...
be happy to get to the chief representative.
Yeah, or any other information. I know there's some folks sitting on the back bench there who also can help with those numbers and help us get an understanding of what we're doing. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Abrams or someone else who might know the answer, how is it that the university would plan on utilizing the financial resources of these season ticket holders or other alumni in connection with the proposed funding plan for the stadium?
Before we bring down, I believe, Mr. Fitzenreiter, I did want to respond to another point that Representative Mahoney made about ticket taxes. At least this tax chair worked hard to make sure that not-for-profits and state universities and state and the university system didn't pay a ticket tax. As a matter of fact, I think that there has been some bills that have gone through the process over the last 6 or 7 years, means that no higher education institution has to pay a ticket tax for games played at their facilities. I would stand to be corrected on that. So, you know, there's nothing new here that there is no ticket tax for the University of Minnesota. But Mr. Fitzgerald,
the Abrams, there are no fees then, are there?
What's a tax? Here. What's a fee? When's a regulation a tax? I mean, what's a surcharge? I don't know.
Exactly. Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Richard Fitzenreiter. I'm the CFO and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. Members, if you could repeat the question just so I make sure I know.
Representative Lax. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fitzenreiter, how is it that the university plans to utilize the financial resources of the season ticket holders and alumni in connection with the financing plans for this stadium?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the university has done what we like to refer to as a project pro forma on the stadium. And we have projected into the future what the revenue stream will be from the stadium, what our expenses will be, game day expenses, etc. And as Athletic Director Maturi mentioned earlier, based on that pro forma, the bottom line of the athletic department from this stadium improves by about $3.5 million. As Athletic Director Maturi mentioned, we have 25 sports. Not all of them generate money, and that additional profit on the stadium, if it comes to be, will be necessary to continue to support all the other athletic teams as football does today. And that's how the actual ticket and broadcasting and sponsorships activities will materialize to the bottom line. On alumni, the fundraising effort that's underway as part of the university's responsibility is substantial, and we have continued to pursue the philanthropic gifts from alumni. We have plans to go aggressively towards that. We do feel today that we're somewhat hampered in our ability to pursue that because people aren't sure whether the state is going to commit to the stadium. We feel that if we can get the commitment from the state, we will be able to raise the balance of the money from alumni and philanthropic sources.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fitzenreiter, are you projecting any ticket price increases in your project pro forma there? Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe in the pro forma, and I'm going to look at Liz Yule from the athletic department. It's an The projected ticket pricing in the pro forma was roughly inflation.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lance.
Well, me and the zero.
It occurred.
I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, I recognize what Representative Abrams said with regard to ticket taxes. Although my understanding is that would be, you know, if a ticket tax were added on for purposes other than building a stadium, like to support
other municipal needs or something like that. But in this case, it would be, if it were added on, it would be specifically for the purpose of funding the building of that stadium. And I wonder if Representative Abrams knows of, or if the university knows of any other situations that, around the country where some sort of a surcharge has been added, a user fee, if you will, to help support the building of a new stadium.
Right. Mr. Fitzmaurice, are you going to have any licenses? You got any suites? What do you got going over there?
Mr. Chairman, offhand, I don't know of any particular athletic venue that's put a surcharge on tickets. I will point out, I believe I'm right, that our current football tickets, non-student tickets, are... Well, hi, Liz. I'll let her answer what our current ticket prices are. Go ahead.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name.
My name is Liz Yule. I'm the Senior Associate Athletic Director for Gopher Athletics and the Chief Financial Officer for Gopher Athletics. Our ticket prices for next year, for season 2006, will be $225 for season tickets, for public season tickets, and our student ticket will be $10 a game for the six games, so $60. One point I'd like to make with any surcharges that we might put on our ticket revenue, let me back up. In the Big Ten, we share the conference ticket revenue from our football games. And any surcharge you put on your ticket, you share with the rest of the Big Ten. Just a point of clarification.
Before you leave, let me ask a different question. I believe the football program is a revenue-producing sport for the university. Do that, you know, so the revenues that are generated, do they help some of the other sports out, or what happens to those revenues?
Mr. Chairman, we have three teams at the University of Minnesota that produce more revenue than we utilize to support them. And that's football, men's basketball, and men's hockey. Our women's basketball program is within about $200,000 of breaking even. The rest of our 21 sports do not make enough money to support the overall operation of that sport.
So the excess in the three sports of which you mentioned, do they help defray the cost of the other sports?
Certainly, along with a number of other revenue streams. We're highly diversified in our revenue.
And so in theory, if you bring more people to games, if the numbers that Mr. Maturi spoke of, that generates more people going to the games, will that then generate more revenue for those other sports?
Correct.
Thank you. And then last, do you have other questions?
Well, I would just ask if the university had considered some sort of either ticket price increase or a surcharge to help fund a new stadium, and if you did consider it and rejected it, why?
All right.
Mr. Chairman, members, the overall pro forma, as Mr. Fritzenreiter said, does take into account ticket price increases on our season tickets. It is a challenge each year that we address in pricing our tickets and trying to balance between making it an affordable opportunity for families to come to our events, as well as trying to make a smart business decision. So that all comes into effect every year.
So when you think about maximizing your revenue on those, that, you know, you want to get it too high, you drive people out, you get it too low,
yes,
you know, you want to lose that.
Legislators then.
Exactly. In the new plan, though, are you going to have any, what happens to the suite revenue in the dome? Do you benefit the university? Does that go down south to Mike Lynn? What happens to the...
Mr. Chairman, currently we don't receive any revenue from our participation in the suites at the dome. And that is one of the extraordinary benefits of having your own stadium, is that you can generate revenue from suites and advertising and club revenue that we can't experience right now.
Other comments before we vote on the A-10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, Representative Mahoney.
You know, Mr. Chair, I've done a couple. Representative Kahn has a couple. If you'd like.
We'll come back to you.
Come on back.
Absolutely. Representative Kahn, do you wish to proceed? Do you have any particular order in which you'd like to present your amendments?
Let's do them in numerical order. Start with A8.
Before we do that, let me do one more thing. Is there somebody who wants to testify, has to get out of here? Is there a Bill Jewell? And I'm on the list. Do you want to hang around all day, or do you want to? Do you want to come down now, or do you want to wait till later?
It doesn't really pertain directly to the bill. Why don't I just pass it this time? I wrote a bill for the saving bill for the legislature. I've got a copy in the cart. You can give that to me in the homework if you could read it.
Okay, good enough. And, sir, did you want to say something before? I don't want to start a herd of people down here, so we'll...
Yes, I am going to say something.
All right. Please sit and identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Eamon Anderson. I live in Chisago, Minnesota. I also live in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. I came down for these hearings. I'm a retired high school teacher. I make $28,000 a year. My wife is a part-time intensive care nurse. My profession is an honorable profession, and I'm retired. My wife, as a nurse, is an honorable person. We're season ticket holders at the University of Minnesota. We get three tickets, even though there are two of us, because we want to support Gopher football. That's our income. Part-time nurse, retired teacher. I've also offered $10,000 to the building in the stadium. I don't know how typical I am, but I suspect I'm fairly typical. A lot of my friends are typical in income and commitment to the stadium. We'll do our part. We'll raise a lot of money. We want to. And I hope you support the stadium.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the comments. Thank you. Representative Kahn, which amendment would you like to go with first?
A8, since we've been talking about fees.
A8, the Kahn fee amendment. Nothing about raising poultry here, is there?
No. Mr. Chairman, you know, since you did a very good job of taking your committee all around the state to look at lots and lots of places, and we visited several campuses, and one of the campuses we visited was Mankato, and one of the things they showed to us was a stadium reasonably newly built. I don't know exactly when it was built, John, but a reasonably newly built stadium on Mankato. And one of the side comments that was made at the time was that the stadium was built with some proportion of student fees, and in fact that was decided that a referendum was placed to the students, and that was built with student fees after the students had voted to do so in a referendum, I guess, for all the students that were subject to the fee. And I don't understand why we consider the students at Mankato to have better judgment than the students at the University of Minnesota. I don't think if the students that voted 40-1 are indeed indicative of the student base at the university, then clearly this will not be a problem. So I would just like us, the set of students in my office yesterday, and I asked each of them if they felt that they should. They were, I don't know how supportive they were of the stadium, but they were united in believing that it should not come on the back of student fees.
Mm-hmm. Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, the fee would not take effect. The Regents wouldn't oppose the fee until the stadium would be completed in 2009. So I don't know how you're going to basically figure out which students are going to be subjected to the fee when a good portion of them are going to be gone by 2009. I would hope that we would allow the University of Minnesota to Board of Regents to be the Board of Regents. It says all students proposed to be subject to the fee are entitled to vote. So if you're a senior and you're going to graduate in 2006, why should you vote on a fee that is not going to be in place until 2009?
Representative Kahn.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would assume then that the vote would occur before the fee is about to be put into place.
You wouldn't mind just one moment? I believe Representative Solberg, there's a gentleman to his right who has a few comments to make. I think he came here today with his sister, and he may not be able to mill around as long. But I'm told by the coach he's the number one football fan. Representative Solberg, did he have a couple of comments he wishes to make?
Mr. Chairman, why don't you deal with the amendment?
I
got some further information. The fee is going to be imposed on entering students in 2007.
Entering students in 2007?
Yes. So, you know, I don't know how you conduct a referendum on students who aren't there yet, and how do you do the financing? If you're grandfathered in to pay zero, if you're kind of like Bluto and Animal House and are a ninth year senior, if you're before 2007, you won't pay the fee. But if you're an incoming freshman in 2007, the fee is going to be phasing in. So
6 years. Representative Connor.
So the phased in fee is then into the. I would just let them, that's smart there, they can rework the financing package and figure it out. But I would just say that the, I would just suggest that at the point that the fee is to be put on the students, that there is then a referendum, as to whether student fees should be allowed to pay for this.
Additional comments?
So I now understand, I guess I had thought that the student fee was to be imposed when the bill was passed. I now understand why there isn't more aggravation, to use a word, on campus about the existence of the fee.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I too would urge members to vote against this. I just don't know how you go into any big building project of any sort without financial certainty in terms of how you're going to pay for it. You can't even go to a bank and get a loan without telling them how you're going to pay for it, and it can't be incumbent upon the future. And then furthermore, there's all sorts of fees that I think the students pay. I know when I was a student, there were some fees that I got to pay that I didn't, for groups I didn't agree with, but I paid them. So you're not always going to agree with every fee that's instituted. But the fact of the matter is that the students have voted and asked us to allow them to put their fee and participate in this whole financial picture, and there's got to be certainty.
Representative Kahn.
You know, one of the things I wish we could take out of this discussion is some of the hyperbole. Let me give a couple of examples. I think the idea that the students have voted is something that I think the concept of representative any concept of representative democracy does not deal with the wide variety of students that there are on campus. Let me also deal, as long as I'm on this topic, let me deal with the idea of bringing the football back on campus. Let me point out, listening to Tom Zuri's speech about how Kauffman Union was the heart of the campus, well, the Metrodome is closer to Kauffman Union than the new site is to Kauffman Union. So we're not really bringing football back on campus. Let me also deal with... Now, I hate to criticize Regent Metzen because I just don't know enough about his lifestyle, and I also haven't seen this property at on the Vermilion River, although I've probably been pretty close to it. But if he really believes it's the most beautiful property, the most beautiful piece of land in the entire United States or the Northern Hemisphere or whatever it is, I do suggest that he take at least a little trip to, you know, maybe the Great Smokies, the Grand Canyon, maybe try and climb Mount Denali and Elbert several Lane. Other.
Elbert Lee is just
Lake Catherine.
And several other places. But, you know, if Mankato could figure out how you had a vote on student fees before they did their stadium, somehow I think the University of Minnesota could figure out how to do that. And it might mean that you have to have a backup appropriation. You might have to have backup university bonds in place. The university does have bonding authority, and we haven't had any discussion about what's happening to the university bonding authority in this packet. We do have Danny Schulsted talk to us about the 60,000 alumni. Well, assuming that their income is probably at least four times greater than that of a student, if each of those 60,000 alumni came up with $200 just even 1 year, that gets us $12 million. And if they come up with $200 every year, that gets us $12 million a year, which is certainly a big chunk of that. So, you know, I think it I think it can be worked out. This bill has a bunch of committees to go to, and I just think that the concept that the students should, would be able to vote on the fee, since people somehow believe that they have voted on the fee, would be a good idea.
Any additional comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Kahn amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say a few words if you
can. Absolutely. Number one fan, according to the coach. So.
Identify yourself.
Okay. Hi, my name is Nick Jones. Welcome. I've been a longtime fan of the Gophers. And I just would like to say that I really do approve of the stadium, and also that I also have one question. Where is the actual, do we actually even know if the, where the handicapped seats are going to be?
A good question, I hope we do.
With the help that they owe you, young man.
All right. Mr. Fissenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, the actual stadium is not yet designed. We will accommodate this individual's needs and others in the stadium. It is a priority and will be dealt with when the architects design the stadium.
Great. That's a very good question. Mr. Jones, thank you for your comments, and appreciate you taking the time to come down and listen to the testimony and give us your input. We appreciate it very much. Representative Kahn, do you have another amendment?
Yes, A9 amendment.
The Kahn A9 amendment.
Now, this is an item which I don't even think I ought to have to bring before this committee at this time, but and this comes from, as a way of explanation, I will point out that the stadium is in my legislative district, and it will greatly impact my neighbors and my constituents, and they have brought several concerns to me, which I feel it is, I've been sent here to express those.
Are you laying the groundwork for an extension?
One of the properties, one of the pieces, and the community is not opposing, they're not opposing the stadium, they're not standing in the way of the bulldozers or any of the things, even with the dramatic effect it may have on their lives. They just like to have a couple of little things taken care of. One of them is the issue of fire station number 19, which is, by its number, the 19th fire station built in the city of Minneapolis. And it is a building that the neighborhood once worked to save from the university at a point when they wanted to acquire it and turn it down. If you look at your sketch that you see of the stadium, it's the kind of red brick building towards the left-hand bottom corner. Now, there's no need to consider this in the stadium, with the stadium at all. In fact, the university thought it was so irrelevant to the stadium issue that was not even considered as part of the EIS statement. So even though in doing an EIS statement, one would have to, it's also on all historical registers and that sort of stuff. Doing an EIS statement, you would have had to comment on the historical preservation issues since it wasn't listed within the boundaries. There was no comments made on it in the EIS statement. Suddenly, there are now threats of eminent domain. There is an owner who has an architectural studio there. He's put a lot of effort into it. He intends to keep this building, and the university, there's certainly a threat of eminent domain from the university to alleviate the threat of eminent domain. And I understand, I don't think there's any problem with any of the land acquisition for the rest of it, to alleviate the threat of eminent domain for this structure, I would like to pass the A9 amendment.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, as many of those who sat through last night understand my belief in the preservation of old things.
this one is...
I think, having seen Station 19 and the delightful way that they've already restored it, so the state would not be investing any money in restoring it, I would feel comfortable supporting this particular amendment.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I thought I was going to have to explain that to you, that there was no money, this was totally restored, this was a very nice job that most of us watched on an almost day-by-day basis. So thank you for your
comment. Just for the members who didn't catch on to that, there's generally not a building I don't support tearing down to build a better one.
But this one I will point out, this is not a building, Mr. Chairman, this is not a building that's on the 50-yard line. This is a building that is so far out of the university's plan that they didn't see any need to include it in the EIS statement. And I would just like this extra protection put into the bill. And I'd actually make it, if it needs to be specifically, if it needs to more specifically refer to Station 19, you know, I'd be perfectly happy to have that happen later as it goes on.
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, as Representative Kahn is aware, and we have discussed on several occasions, the construction of the stadium does not require the acquisition of Station 19. However, this amendment would prevent us from constructing the stadium because the realignment of the road for the stadium that is necessary requires 15 spaces of a parking lot owned by Station 19. This amendment would allow this owner, the way the amendment is, to block the construction of the stadium because he could block the acquisition, if he's unwilling to sell, of 15 spaces in a parking lot.
Okay.
Representative Kahn.
As Mr. Fitzenreiter well knows, and as the discussion with the owner well knows, is that there is no objection to the acquisition of the 15 parking spaces. So, you know, I apologize for the miswriting of the amendment, and if I can have some help from staff to make it just specific to the fire station number 19, you know, that would certainly be acceptable to me, and I think that will do. There was no intention with this to block the construction of the stadium or the realignment of the road. It's just specifically to approve, and I do believe that when you take the 15, I understand you've already committed to help replace the 15 parking spaces, so I don't believe that's an issue. But I do understand that the language would not have to allow you to be held hostage for the 15 parking.
Kahn, if I got Mr. Fitzenreiter right, he's on tape saying they're not going to take the building down, and everybody in the room has heard him, and you're saying you understand that they're not going to take it down.
No.
And you still want to proceed? Representative Abrams, did you have a comment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it just appears to me Mark, I'm going to break our agreement. There is an interesting constitutional argument that's available here for an institution that predates the Minnesota Constitution as to if the legislature can limit the university's use of eminent domain. But you have Mr. Fitzenreiter. We can bring up President Brunig. They're not going to take the building. What I would suggest, Representative Kahn, is that if that will not suffice, that this bill will go to the Ways and Means Committee.
Which I'm not a member.
You don't serve there. But if you and the university can work out some language, or if you have some language that the university would agree to, I'm not going to stand in the way of Station 19, but the language you have here doesn't work, Representative Kahn, as you understand.
Representative Kahn.
I would like to amend my amendment to strike the language any of the property to in line 1.4, any of the property to be used, and substitute fire station number 19. So the board may not acquire fire station number 19. And I will, Representative, for the construction shall not acquire, let me put down, fire station number 19 building. So that we're not dealing with the parking lot. The fire station number 19 building for the construction of the stadium and related infrastructure, directly or and you know, the neighborhood, the university has said that they don't intend to, at some point in the conversations, they've said many things, and we do know that in the past, they did try and take it down. But the university, but the problem is there is also problems of the acquisition of it from an unwilling owner who has put a lot of work into having this be something that works in the area and for what the university might need it. And if we're and so I think this language certainly fits in with what they've said they intend to do, and it makes my constituents much happier.
Representative,
so it's not just the destruction, it's also the acquisition.
Sorry,
it specifically doesn't deal with anything except the building.
Representative Hollisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I have sat through at least one committee where we've listened to the eminent domain legislation. I've listened to lots of the press conferences and radio reports and the rhetoric around eminent domain, and I cannot imagine that this committee won't enthusiastically pass this amendment. Otherwise, I really call into question all of the sincerity behind all of the rhetoric I've been hearing about eminent domain.
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, we have no agreement at this time with the owner of Station 19 regarding the 15 parking spaces. In my view, this amendment does not help our ability to acquire, even by negotiation, those 15 spaces.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzenreiter. Additional comment. Representative Broad.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hausman, I think one of the discussions around eminent domain, and we've had a number of them, is to create a greater consistency and fairness. And I don't know how this amendment creates, when we're essentially saying they can't use the power, amendment creates, when we're essentially saying they can't use the powers of eminent domain, which there's question as to whether we can do this, first of all, or not. But secondly, we're doing it for one piece of property. That, to me, is a great inconsistency and does nothing to help the debate, and very proper debate over eminent domain. You, kind of the segmenting it out and identifying one piece of land just doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense in the whole scheme of eminent domain, which has proper discussion here at the legislature. Well,
Representative Kahn.
I did not bring this up in the general context of eminent domain. I brought this up in the context of the irrationality of acquiring a piece of private property which is so out of their general plans that they didn't seem fit to include it in the EIS. If they felt they needed to include it, then it should have been listed in the EIS so that there was the, in the projection for the EIS, so there was the ability for comment on it. That's just basic honesty. This suddenly came afterwards, after all the comments on the EIS were in. This is something, you know, this is a piece of private property that is paying taxes in the city of Minneapolis that is being used for by an architectural firm that has been very nicely restored over a long period of time. And you know, I don't see the problem with saying that this building will not be acquired. This bill has many, many steps to go, and if this there's something wrong with this language and it's going to interfere with something else, they're going to have many opportunities to do it.
Well, Representative Kahn, you and the university are on the same page. They've publicly stated they're not going to acquire it.
And this publicly says it in a way that I've been trained is how we publicly say things as legislators.
Any more discussion on the E9 Amendment? Representative Lath.
Mr. Chairman, I'm certainly sympathetic to Representative Kahn's goal. But maybe Station 19 doesn't object right now to selling 15 parking spaces, but I can pretty much guarantee you if that were to be construed as covered by this protection, they certainly would object later, and that points out some of the great difficulties with the general eminent domain legislation that seems to be working its way through this legislature, is you end up giving individual private property owners enormous power to hold entire communities hostage or for buyout. In effect, an amendment such as this could dramatically increase the property value of Station 19. And not suggesting that the university has any design at this time on Station 19. But I'm reluctant, frankly, to be making decisions right now about preserving an individual building. I'm not sure that it's appropriate. I'm not sure I'm comfortable making those kind of decisions in this context. From what I gather, it's a terrific building and a terrific private property. That's a separate question from the constitutional question, which I think has been raised as well.
Representative Abrams, just before we vote on this, do you want to express your feelings clearly on this amendment?
After consulting with the university at this time, I'd have to oppose the amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, we've specifically tied it down just to the building. They have no inability to acquire it. They just can't acquire it by eminent domain. And the point is that they have, I think, Representative Blass, you have a sense of fairness and a sense of due process and so forth. Don't you think if it was something that they needed, that they should have put it into the discussion in the form of the EIS, which is how we do public discussion on the property use?
Any additional discussion to the A9 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Latz.
Representative Kahn, my sense of fairness is that the eminent domain proceedings have a sense of fairness if they were ever to be utilized. There are specific statutory and constitutional requirements for due process there.
When we do a major construction...
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, and we've decided by our environmental laws that it's subject to an EIS, the honest, honorable thing to do is to put everything that has to be considered into the EIS and the EIS. But maybe the people I should be asking is the university as to why wasn't their designs on Station 19 put into the... put on the table for the possibility of discussion in the EIS process.
Representative Kahn, is that a question for the university?
Which I guess we don't have to answer. But.
Okay, I guess it wasn't a question.
Yes, it is. It is a question.
It is a question. Mr. Fitzreiter, did you understand the question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to have Brian Swanson, who was the works for me at the University of Minnesota and was the lead staff person on the EIS, comment on Representative Kahn's question about whether it was included in the EIS.
Mr. Swanson, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, Brian Swanson with the Budget Office at the University. The Environmental Assessment Worksheet, which is the first document that goes into an environmental impact study, excluded from the study historical preservation issues because they were had been discussed as part of the EAW process, and the Historical Society did not comment during the public comment period on the historic Station 19. Subsequent to the EAW, during the draft environmental impact study development, the issue of Station 19 was raised and was included, although not required to be. It was addressed in the EIS. It was addressed in the final EIS, and additional comments were offered in the adequacy decision document published in the March 27th EQB Monitor, and all those documents are available on the university website, and we could go get them if we needed to.
Is this
additional comments on the Kahn amendment?
I'm sorry, is the March 27th
of what year?
The town, Mr. Pitzenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the YouTube monitor was published this Monday.
Okay. Okay. I think you may understand that the people in my district did not feel that they had an adequate opportunity to do this, and this has obviously been added as an afterthought when the issue was raised when the EIS was being considered.
All those in favor of the Kahn amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Kahn, have you another amendment?
No, I don't think so. I had...
Representative Mahoney.
I have one amendment left. I have a sneaky suspicion how this one will come out.
You never know, though.
You don't. You don't. The A3 amendment.
The Mahoney A3 amendment.
This is on page 3 of the delete all amendment, line 10. It has, I don't have the amendment right, the delete all in front of me. I think it's 9.4 million.
Mm.
Delete that and insert $10,891,000.
Yeah.
Same on page 3, line 11. And on page 2, I'm sorry, page 3, line 18, insert stadium name, and the stadium shall be named Veterans Memorial Stadium. What this amendment does is add the $1.4 million that is needed to make up the same amount of dollars that the corporation is investing in this, so that our window to the state is not a corporate window to the state. I've tried this, I think, three times. I'm going to try it one more time, and I'll take the student fees off my amendment. But, I love this, the idea of this stadium. I want this stadium. I will be entirely disappointed. I don't know if anyone else has done this. Maybe even the university should start looking at the blogs and the nicknames that these initials are coming up with amongst your own students. I don't really want to put the corporation on the spot here, but the corporation is going to be named on this stadium. They're interesting. And I can't say them here because we're being broadcast or recorded. So, one last chance. Name it after our veterans. I won't belabor the point, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, same argument.
They can't fail? Not
something else. Something else.
Okay. Same argument as I made before, Mr. Chairman. I think that you also have to consider all of the other collaboratives that the university is entering into and what effect turning our back on this will have on a going forward basis, not only for the university, but for other institutions of higher education in the state. So I'd recommend a no vote.
No. Right in the mouth.
Additional comments? Representative Lats.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. I'm not sure why these are mutually exclusive questions. I mean, why is it that we couldn't have... I know there's an objection to corporation being the naming rights, but why couldn't we have a corporate name and veterans in the name of the stadium?
Representative Abrams, do you care to comment? Representative Thorberg, after listening to the testimony on the amendment, perhaps you could comment.
Well,
just say no.
Mr. Chair.
Very insightful, Representative.
Mr. Fissenreiter.
Mr. Chairman, members, the naming agreement with TCF has a particular name required in the contract. During the course of the negotiations, the notion of having some kind of blended name was brought up. And as you know, these are important marketing issues and branding concerns for TCF. They are a partner that not only is contributing to the stadium, but contributes substantial dollars to scholarships through our support and sponsorship of our UCARD program. And this was their desire to brand and not have a confusing name.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, you know, it makes me think about Williams Arena and the fact that I never call it Williams Arena, I always call it the Barn. So, you know, you never know what might happen here in terms of what this thing is called by the students. So,
Representative Kelleher, unfortunately, in the contract, you see, the Barn is called the Barn over the radio. It will never be called any other name than the corporation who's purchased this name over the radio. It will never be called the stadium. It will always be called
the Cool Field.
That might be in there.
Additional comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. The amendment is not adopted. A division is called for. The amendment is not adopted. Division is called for. Those in favor, raise a paw. My hearing is bad. It's not that bad. Those opposed. Now, 4-11. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to propose that if we're ready to vote, that we have a roll call.
Carmel.
Do we?
I'm sorry. Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call.
I'm
hungry. That's all I was saying. Are there more amendments?
No, I just...
Right. No, we have additional comments.
Third reading? The others aren't being offered.
Are there any other amendments that... Abrams, was it just one amendment you had? Did you have any other author amendments?
That was it.
Other amendments? Going? Third reading. Okay, let's go to the comment period. Representative Kelleher, do you wish to go first?
No,
Representative Kelleher, and I pointed her. So how do you like that?
I'm really confused.
That's tricky. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think it's important for us to focus on the right number today as we vote. One of the gentlemen who wrote us a letter opposing this says the university is planning to seek $100 million in state appropriations. And in fact, the math tells me that though at one last year it was going to be $5 million a year, early this year it was $7 million a year, and now it's $9.4 million for 25 years. When we vote for this, we are voting for $235 million in taxpayer money to go to the stadium. I mean, that is the number. It's not $100 million. It's not $99. It's not, it is $235 million. There were a few comments that were a little breathtaking early on. The president called this historic legislation. The student said the soul of the U is a stadium. My distress today is that before we do bonding for the university, before we do the bioscience initiative that would make the university a world-class research institution, we are going to spend $235 million for an athletic facility. I represent the St. Paul campus. I represent lots of students and faculty. I've had lots of conversations with them about this. And there is no question that I strongly support the university and its academic programs and would love to see this in fact, reach its aspirations of a world-class research institution. I strongly support all of its bonding initiatives that are before us this year. But the priorities for the university, as reflected in the presentation of this bill, have been somewhat staggering to me. Attendance today with regents, with administrators and boosters, unprecedented, as we discussed bonding this year, gimmicks distributed to us for the promotion of this, but not all of the other university initiatives, the academic initiatives, not done for the Carlson School of Business or the Medical Research Facility or the Science Classroom Building. And you can say this isn't your most important initiative, but unfortunately, as we say, the actions speak louder than words. My experience of sports facilities decisions on the university campus have been somewhat different than others have expressed here today. I recall when the university was making a decision to build a women's hockey arena. At the time, Bob Milbert was still a member of this body and sat in front of me, and he knows something about hockey. In fact, I think his daughter was on the team. Told me at the time that no other school in this country or in Canada was building two hockey facilities. When the women's soccer facility was built in my district at the corner of Larpenter and Cleveland, I watched as that, and again, with there were taxpayer dollars, that has stood largely empty. It is used, I suspect, maybe 8 games, and it is not used other than that. And I'm told that they don't share because it has something to do with the quality of the turf that they require for their games. But it feels to me as though the university doesn't share. So my experience has been different than the one offered here today. Now we're putting significantly more taxpayer money into an athletic facility. And though there again have been assurances, I will wait with bated breath about how generous the university is as it uses and shares its taxpayer-funded facilities. I may be the only no vote today. This is one of those, just like the eminent domain bill, that is sailing through and being voted for overwhelmingly. But I will confess that for me, the energy and the rah-rah spirit that I felt in this room left me a little sick to my stomach when I realized that all of the faculty and students I represent always just talk to me about academic excellence and the academic needs of that institution.
Thank you, Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thought I was on the list earlier for some questions, and I'm
my apologies.
I should have checked again, and I can switch it to a quick comment because this bill is moving forward in ways and means, and I do intend to support it today, although I do have concerns and questions, and I'll keep working on getting that satisfied. Mr. Chair, when Mr. Fitzenreiter was testifying, the message I got was that basically we need the commitment from the state. If we get the commitment from the state, we can raise the remaining dollars. And then the gentleman stepped forward somewhat spontaneously who showed the kind of support that is out there to be tapped when he said even on a limited income, he and his wife would do our part and put in an additional $10,000. My thoughts have been, knowing that Mr. Fitzenreiter wields a sharp pencil, that he's, I know he's not a wild-eyed, liberal, pie-in-the-sky, thousands and thousands of dollars coming in that he isn't sure about. And so to take the flip side of that, I'm raising the question in my own mind, what if Mr. Fitzenreiter has been so conservative and underestimated those folks that are out there that will step forward and raise a considerable amount of private dollars, fundraising dollars, and at that point being told that oftentimes the stadium is the kind of facility that will attract people who will donate who might not donate for other facilities. Is there a point at which The state taxpayers have made a commitment, but the commitment could be reduced by the amount of dollars that would come forward. And so I don't know that today. I don't know if anybody would know, but that is something that I wanted to think about some more in terms of the balance of it all, because you know part of this, at least in the findings in the front, talks about this as not being a substitute for any of the other operating capital or operating support that the state has given. And you know, in my 20 years here, I hope I am considered to be someone who has been fair and a friend of the University of Minnesota, and people know I have a passion for education and higher education. And given all of the ways you can argue the differences, I think what we've usually resolved over the years is that when it all boils down, we've tried to kind of find a 50-50 split in terms of what we do with higher education. We aim for that to be fair, even though there are all sorts of differences in terms of student population. I think the square footage is probably pretty much the same on the two systems, ironically enough. So, you know, I think that is an issue for people who eventually will see this bill and have to vote on it. And so I want to know that we are maximizing that the powerful ability of the University of Minnesota to get its friends to help it when it brings things forward. I more than that I want to say today, but I do want to pursue that and learn more and as the bill goes forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. President Keller, did you have comments?
There are other concerns, again, that the people in my neighborhood have, which will affect them, and in fact, the people in the entire city of Minneapolis, and even, you know, in that exhausted district of Representative Kelleher has even had some extra crime in the past few weeks, and so. And one of the things that has also been asked for, and I thought about drawing up an amendment, but I really thought it was more into operations than into bonding, was that people from my area have asked, for example, at least a number, which is a very minimal number compared, for example, what the city of Madison supplies in terms of police power anytime that there's a game at the stadium there. They've asked for the university to include in their financial estimates funding for at least 12 extra police power around this at game day. And I think that's a very minimal, because the university has done all kinds of actions around this neighborhood, which has actually been a problem of the increasing crime and has engaged in helping with buildings which have been a disaster in the area. And so I would like to know from the university what they're intending to do. Is the policing for game days and so forth going to be put entirely as a burden on the Minneapolis Police Department, or are you going to make any commitment as to police extra police for the problems that just game days alone will bring?
It's an writer comment on the policing. And have you been in the neighborhood over there a while?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a son living in that neighborhood. The pro forma on the project included all expenses of game day activities, just like the expenses we pay when we play in the dome today, which includes paying for police, and those are expenses of game day, and they are the expenses of the Department of Athletics. And this, in our view, I can't give you a number today of how many police. This is going to, you know, find its way as we gain experience in the neighborhood. We have a neighborhood advisory group. We're working closely with them. And we're committed to making sure that this stadium works.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to bring in specific numbers. But there is a commitment to look at university supplying extra extra police power. And I think they're much more interested in actually having payment to the, you know, it's not that university police. The university police do not seem to have the same powers as the city of Minneapolis police. And I think one of the things that they're specifically interested in is the payment for increased police power from real policemen, not university police.
What?
They're real policemen.
But we've been told that, no, I may be wrong, but we've been told that there are very limited powers for university police to act off campus. Which, and this is what we're looking at. We're not looking for the police, we're not looking at the policing in the activity. We're looking at the off campus, at the problems that occur off campus. And I know, you know, I'm not, again, why I didn't come in with a specific amendment, I know I'm not, although I'm in contact with the people on this neighborhood advisory committee, there is a serious problem about wanting expanded police power on those days and having it be police power in the neighborhoods, not on campus and in the stadium.
Mr. Chairman, members, the university is committed to providing adequate services to the neighborhoods. We believe this will evolve as we gain experience. We will have and will pay for the game day expenses. We are aware in discussions with the neighborhood groups that there are far other serious crime issues in the neighborhood that are occurring well beyond any issues around the stadium, and those are serious issues for the communities around the university, and we're concerned about them as well. And the city of Minneapolis has a responsibility in that area, and we have big concerns that we share with the neighborhood.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn.
And then the other issue, I don't know if this is President Rubens or not, or perhaps Mr. Abrams, because Representative Abrams made this comment, listing all of the universities with all of their and all of the things with all of their corporate names on stadiums and stadiums that have been built. I guess in order to get a corporate name, I assume it means a sizable corporate contribution. Now, I went to a whole lot. I'm sorry, I'm not a graduate of the University of Minnesota, but I went to a lot of institutions that are actually considered pretty outstanding universities in when you're listing the fine research academic universities in the country. Not one of them, as far as I know, has built a stadium with a corporate name. As I listened to the list that you were giving, Representative Abrams, I didn't hear that there were any of those universities who are in this number I keep hearing. Sometimes it's the top three, sometimes it's the top five, sometimes it's the top ten. Is there some correlation between the corporate naming of universities and this extensive interest in stadiums and the inability of a university to get into that top five, top ten research ranking?
Something that Abrams wish to comment?
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman,
what did MIT do in football last year? Anybody know?
Not as expected.
When I look at the list I have here, Representative Kahn, there are some very fine research universities listed. I wouldn't put them in the same league as the University of Minnesota, but I would say that in some areas, the University of Maryland, the University of Cincinnati, particularly in health sciences, is very good. And University of Washington has a pretty extensive research. But if you're asking, do I consider them to be in the same league as the University of Minnesota in research? The answer is obviously no. The University of Minnesota is probably one of the, if you believe the journals, one of the top 5 to 7 public research universities in the United States, and I wouldn't put those names in there. I don't think there's a correlation, Representative Kahn.
Yeah, and I would say that none of those 5 to 7 have, Washington, I guess might fit in there, but that's not what we've heard the ambitions of President Blumenthal for status. And I guess I'm going to join with my colleague, Representative Hausman. I'm going to join with the constituent comments that I have had with the faculty members, the many, you know, I admit that students have contacted me on both sides of this issue, but most of the ones that seem to be seriously concerned with the academic status of the university seem to put this rather low on their priority list. And I have to also, although I had originally intended to vote for this, and I still may when it makes its final process, so I am disappointed in the sequence, and I'm disappointed in what I see as the priorities of the university. And I know that particularly my constituents who are on the faculty are more than disappointed. And I think that having a contented faculty is one of the things that gets much more likely to get you into the ranks of the top 5, the top 10, whatever that number is, public research institutions, than having a new outdoor stadium allegedly on campus.
Mr. Chair, go back to the priest, and all I can say is when I was part of the crowd hanging Murray Warmath, I was hoping there weren't any policemen around. We have them in effigy only.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did want to at least make some comments about my good friend Representative Hausman's statement, and also what Representative Kahn stated about the priorities of the University of Minnesota. I probably have at least one, if not three or four meetings a day with either President Brunigs or Donna Peterson or Dick Fitzenrider or some other member of the staff of the University of Minnesota on their legislative initiatives. And I would have to say that although this is something that is discussed, I would say much more time, attention, and energy has been expended regarding, number one, the capital investment request that's before this committee, and number two, the biomedical initiative in which I'm the author. And I have another three or four stops I have to make if we're able to do it this year. I think it is a misstatement to say that there's a single-minded intent of the university on the stadium issue. I think that the university views this as in addition to, rather than a number one priority of the university. I know that this bill author on the Gopher Stadium, as much as I may believe in that, probably believes stronger about the biomedical initiative. It is a very, as Representative Pawlowski can tell you, it is a very, very difficult issue when you add in how do you make these decisions? How do you do the forward planning? What's part of the sheet does this come on? It is in its first 6 months. I hope we're able to get it done this year. I don't know if we're going to be able to. But I do know that this issue is ripe for action by this legislature this year. The stadium issue is ripe for action by this legislature this year. I believe that the university's priorities are correct, which is number one on capital investment, number two on biomedical, number three on stadiums, but let's see how much down the list we're able to get this year. I believe that this is a unique partnership when you add in the land issue in Dakota County. I believe it has bipartisan and bicameral support. And let's be the legislature that has a list of accomplishments. I hope to add to it another couple for the university, and I hope that this committee puts together a great capital investment bill that will serve the state well in your further deliberations on that issue. But I'd like to thank members for the opportunity. I'd like to thank them for the Representative Solberg for hanging in there, and for the comments of committee members, which may lead to some tweaking of the bill as it goes along.
We're sort of at the two-minute warning. We've got a couple more comments, but if there are members out of the room, looks like they're all here, but you might want to hang tight if you want to vote on it. So we're getting there. But Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I think people know how I feel about this, and I expect the author of the bill to have the last word. So
thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, Representative Solberg, Representative McNamara, just thank you for your leadership on this issue. This is a good bill. Let's vote.
Representative Lance.
I guess, given Representative Mahoney's comments, I will disrespect the authors of the last words. Representative Garofalo, I just want to say, I think if you asked every member on this committee which was the higher priority in terms of the state efforts, and we'd probably all agree that the academic mission of the University of Minnesota is a higher priority than the football mission of the University of Minnesota. I support this bill. I think it's a good approach to solving this problem. But I think the real test will not occur in today's vote. The real test of our state's priorities will occur when we decide how much money we're going to support in the capital investment bill and when we decide whether or not to support the biosciences initiative. That will be the measure of our individual priorities, no matter what order these bills come before us and these decisions get made. So I'll encourage us to support this bill, and I will encourage us to likewise reflect the priorities that I think we all would hold in the end when we consider those other two measures as well. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against the bill before we vote? Seeing no movement, the clerk will call the roll.
McNamara.
Aye.
Broad.
Yes.
Dean.
Yes.
Zimmer.
Yes.
Thorn.
Yes.
Eastland.
Yes.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Hausman.
Yes.
Howes.
Yes.
Garros.
Aye.
Kahn.
No.
Kelleher.
Yes.
Knobloch.
No.
Latz.
Yes.
Mahoney.
Yep.
Murphy?
Yes.
Pulaski?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Solberg?
Yes.
Tinglestad?
Yes.
Chair, sorry. Oh. Foreman.
I may as well.
Aye. There being 19 ayes and 3 nays, the bill is passed and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means.